जयं विश्वपादपरमहंसपरिव्राजकाचार्यः अष्टोत्तरशतश्रीश्रीमान् अभयचरणारविन्दभक्तिवेदान्तगोस्वामी महाराज शील प्रभुपादिकि जयं नितिलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपादपरमहंसपरिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशतश्रीश्रीमान् भक्तसिद्धान्त सरस्वती महाराज शील प्रभुपादिकि अनंतकोटि वैष्णववृन्दकि नामाचार्य शील हरिदास ठाकुरकि प्रेम सवो श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृंदकि श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोविनाथ श्यामकुंड राधा गुंडगिरि गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायपुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगा माई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की गौर प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरंग ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री प्रभुपाद नमो शुभदाय कृष्ण प्रसाद भूतले श्रीमदे भक्ति वेदांत स्वामीन इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणे ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिदां भगवदां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराण मुनिनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायिनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धदामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणि नमोऽस्तुते व्यासविशालबुद्धे फुल्लारविन्दायुधपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णप्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीप प्रपन्नपारिजाताय तोत्रवेत्रैकपाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वत्सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महत् वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचानूरमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुं विश्वद्रोणतडाजयद्रतजला गान्धारनीलोत्पला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण वहनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमगरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनि सोतीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकेशव पराशर्यवजसरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानकेसरं हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितम् लोकै सज्जनषल्पदैरहरः पेदीयमानं मुदा भूयाद्भारतपङ्कजकलिमलप्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसे मूकं करोति वाचालं पङ्कं लङ्घयति गिरिं यल्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं यं ब्रह्मावरुणीन्द्ररुद्रमरुदं स्तन्यन्ति दिवैः सवैर्वेदैः साङ्गपदैः क्रमोपनिषदैर्गायन्ति यं सामगाः ध्यानामस्ति तद्गदेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुसुरासुरगणे देवाय तस्मै नमः सर्वत्र गोविंद नाम संकीर्तनम् गोविंद गोविंद ऑल चैप्टर्स इन दी भगवद्गीता रिक्वायर्स अ लॉन्ग इंट्रोडक्शन टू अंडरस्टैंड व्हाट द टॉपिक इज डिस्कस्ड सो वी हैव नाउ स्टार्टेड विद दिस 15th चैप्टर which is Purushottama Yogam, isn't it? So, those who engage in karma, the results of their karma, karma phalam. Similarly, those who are jnanis, who are on the path of knowledge, the results of their knowledge also are in Krishna's control. Krishna has spoken that before. And through bhakti process, one who has pleased Krishna, and gradually he comes to the platform of knowledge also, and eventually it ends up, he becomes free from the three modes of nature. And that is how he becomes free from that. And when it is like that, what to talk about one who is already self-realized? So, so this Purushottama Yogam, what Krishna, we were discussing yesterday also, that When we think about this body, it's already prakritistam. Prakritistam. Prakritistam means that they are in the prakriti. Body is inside this prakriti. The mind is also inside this prakriti. Right? So, and similarly in vacant state, dream state and the deep sleep, jagrat, sapnam, sushupti, in all those times, the jiva is also in the prakriti. So, basically we are prakritistam, not swastam, what we said yesterday. When self-realization happened, we become free from prakriti and we become established in swastam, not with the real self, right? So, the Krishna solution is that knowing that and try to get to that state somehow or the other. One has to endeavor very hard for that, to come to that state of swastam or to be situated on the platform of the self, right? So, and ultimately, that's what the goal is, to be situated in the platform of the self, right? And it is very difficult at the old age to get it. It is not possible. It is not possible, right? But without this, there is no success in spiritual life either. Krishna is making it very clear to us that till you realize the self, all your spiritual life is just wobbly. It is not going anywhere. This way, that way, it'll go, and probably you will lose interest also one day, and you will completely give up everything. That can happen. So the point is, Krishna's point is that the it is to be started very early, like Prahlada said. Unless it is started from the very beginning, at the old age, it is not going to work. It's not going to be much effective at all. So, so Krishna mentioned a few things in the last chapter about the importance of seeing Krishna's presence in everyone. And Prahlada also said the same thing to his friends, the boys, right? And the boys naturally, Asuri boys, told Prahlada, is this all possible? Just like we are asking now, is this all possible? Right? Prahlada said that, Kaumara Ajaret Prajna. That's the only answer for that. When they asked a question, is it all possible? Prahlada's answer was, Kaumara Ajaret Prajna. Try from the early days, not too late. Afterwards, it's very difficult. So, before the youthful age comes, this message should be inside, first of all. Before the youth comes, right? And so, that is the reason why at the age of 8, it's the latest by 8 years old, Gayatri Mantram is given to the child and induced into him. So, so Gayatri Devi should enter inside before that and be and inside. That is Brahma Vidya. Brahma Vidya is that, right? So, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavadam, they are not just books only, like any other book. It's not just a book, right? So, at what age a child should come to the process of bhakti or to the process of knowledge? That question is always there. At what age one should start spiritual life? What age a child should start, a person should start spiritual life? Some people say, how can you do it such an early age? And is it not good enough when you get old, 60 or 70 years old, right? So, many times this happens, they think that Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita is all for the old age. At the old age, when you cannot go do anything else, even you can't even hear properly, and that's the time you're going to hear Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, right? Just like when people cannot walk properly, and then they can't even see properly, and then the time people go on pilgrimage, going to all the holy places, because it didn't happen at the time when it should have happened in their life, right? So, because it is not going to be of much help at that age, if all these things, whether it is bhakti yogam, jnana yogam, or any yogam, at the old age, it's not going to be much helpful if it has not started from the beginning, right? If you have practiced it from childhood, right, and you had some realizations from that, then when you are at the old age, you will feel the taste of it, what you have practiced in early life. You will feel some taste of that. Otherwise, nothing will happen, right? And childhood, you did what you wanted to do, try to enjoy the life, and did various things. And same thing with the youth, what Acharya Swami said, balasthaval krida satta, tarunasthaval taruni satta. And then when it is like that, you can only expect vriddhasthaval chinda satta. If balasthaval was krida satta, and tarunasthaval was taruni satta, then vriddhasthaval will be only chinda satta. Nothing else will happen. Yes, what? And that we can see in life with people all the time, right? So, when you get old, the mind will not easily relent, or it will not agree with you. You may not be able to get the mind under control to accept things, to agree with things, right? And what will happen is, whatever that has happened in your life, you'll keep on talking about it in the old age. This happened, that happened. And these thoughts will keep coming out from you, from inside, right? And it will all jump outside from the mind. What the mind has gone through throughout life, those thoughts will come out in some form, and that's what will be the chindasakta means. The thoughts will come all about the family background, family, friends, and society where we grew up. Those thoughts will start coming out very strongly. So that is why he's saying here that even if you want to do it, you won't be able to do anything about it. These things will come out from inside without your knowledge, right? So what that means is that you won't understand what shanti means, dhammam, shamam, all these things won't be there. Shamam, control of the mind, dhammam, control of the senses, these things are not there. He can't control mind, he can't control senses. He don't know how to behave, and at that time, everything, because he is unable to control himself in a situation like that, that happens at the old age. That's the end result. So old age will create a lot of problems for them, right? And therefore, Prahlada said that you have to start from the very early age, right? Now, in the traditional system, there used to be big families with grandfather, grandmother, they all lived at home. And they had the capacity to talk about Ramayanam, Bhagavatam, give them the knowledge of the stories in the, or the essence of the message were given to them, and the children grew up like that, right? And now the situation has changed. There is no grandmother, there is no grandfather, and children are also brought up in a way, in the kindergartens and schools and all that. So there is no chance of them getting this Bhagavata Dharma, what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, right? If you look back into the history of spiritual life in the Bharata Bhumi, everything begins with Krishna. Narayanam Padma Bhuvam Vasishtam Shaktim Talputra Parasharam Cha Vyasam Shugam Gauda Padam Mahandam. The Advaita tradition, that is how it is. From Narayana comes Brahma, and then Vasishta, then Shakti, then Parashara, then Vedavyas, then Sri Shuka Brahmarshi. That's the order. So up to Sri Shuka Brahmarshi, from Krishna, up to Sri Shuka Brahmarshi, it is father to son. It has come like that. Yeah. And then after that, the parambara changed in the sense that different people has come into that parambara. Up to this, up to Sri Shuka Brahmarshi, it was father to son. Father to son. From there itself you can understand that is the process. From Narayanam, Padmabhuvam is Brahma. Vasishta is son. His son, Shakti. His son, Parashara. His son, Vedavyas. His son, Shuka Brahmarshi. So right up to Shuka Brahmarshi, it was like father to son. That's how the process happened, right? Then after that, a great personality guy, Gaudavada Acharya, comes. He got initiated by Shuka Brahmarshi. And then Govinda Bhagavadpada, Bina Acharya Swamiji, like that parambara continued, right? Then Ajari Swami claims the four major disciples, Sotaka, Hastamalaka, Padmavada and Sureshwara. In this way, that parampara continued like this. Yeah? I will tell you why I am saying all these things little later. So, another parampara is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which you can see there. Kasmayena vibhasidoyam malo jnana pradipa pura tudrupena cha naradaya munaye krishnaya tudrupina yogindraya sadatmana adan bhagavadradaya karmyedam tat shuddham vimalam vishokam amrutam satyam param dhimahi. At the end of Bhagavatam, Sudha Goswami says this, right? According to that, Krishna has spoken this knowledge and given to Brahma, and it appeared in Brahma's heart. Just like if you have noticed how, when the banana plantations, when banana is planted, you plant one banana first, a pre-banana plant comes out from that. In a few months' time, you will see his children all around, small ones coming out from different, all around the main banana plant, right? So, in the same way, from Krishna to Brahma, and from Brahma it came down further through Shuka Brahma Rishi and Vedavyasa Maharshi, Narada Vedavyasa. In that way also you see another parampara has come through the knowledge of Bhagavatam, right? So from Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyasa, Vyasa to Shuka Brahma Rishi, Shuka Brahma Rishi to Parikshit. So, and then in that assembly, when Parikshit, Shuka Brahma Rishi spoke this to Parikshit, it happened to be a main Shrota listener there, as Sudha Goswami was there in the assembly of when Shuka Brahma Rishi spoke to Bhagavatam to Parikshit, right? And from Sudha Goswami came many people have come from him. And in that parambara, when this knowledge was delivered, ultimately, it continued like that after Sudha Goswami, and in many families, in many elder members, grandparents, grandfather, grandmother, they all imbibed this knowledge of Bhagavatam from that Shuka Brahma Rishi's tradition. So, that is how it has entered into every home. It has entered into every home, right? And the practice of this Brahma Vidya came to the houses in that way. Through these parambara, the practice of Brahma Vidya has come to houses, right? And the way to understand that is that those great personalities in the beginning who had spoken this Brahma Vidya, the earlier ones, the beginners at that time, they were enjoying the cream. They were enjoying the cream. By the time it came into families and homes, it has become like buttermilk. When they were having it, the pure butter was present. When it started, it was like butter, cream, essentially. It was present there, and all those rishis, great personalities whom you call as the parambara, acharya parambara, they all had relished that butter itself. But by the time it came into families, it has become buttermilk. It has become buttermilk, right? So, by the time it came to grandfather, grandmother, and so the initial acharyas and great personalities, they have churned the milk and managed to take out the cream and enjoy that cream, but butter itself, right? But by the time it came to grandparents and grandchildren and all that, it has become practically very much diluted. Like buttermilk, you can say. It has become like buttermilk. So, normally you give buttermilk to children because if you give them butter, they won't digest it. So you give them in the form of buttermilk, right? And this buttermilk is what we call it as katha now. Katha is this buttermilk. You know, most of the people will talk like this, I want to go and listen to the katha, they say. What is this katha? Katha is nothing but this buttermilk. That's what it is. Katha is not the message. Serious message is not in the katha. That is why if you look at all these big programs going on, If you observe carefully, and the people who sit there also as daft as they are, that they will listen to this katha for 7 days with the music and dancing and all, and then they will go home, nothing happens. Because there is no impact on the people. People are also like that. They also don't have the sense to think about it. So they'll just go there and sit and listen to this katha and come home. So katha is like that. Katha does not help very much. Katha is like this buttermilk. Because the genuine message was in the beginning, when the rishis spoke about it, they took full advantage of it. But by the time it came down through the different generations and came to the family level, and when it has come through grandparents and parents and to the children and grandchildren, it has become very diluted and it has become like this katha thing, right? So katha means butter is already taken. Butter is already taken. And knowledge is all gone from that. But still, there is a taste of that. The taste of that knowledge is still there in it a little bit, right? Essence, you can say, has come into that katha, right? So, just like when you are feeling very hot, if you are given some buttermilk, it's a big relief to drink in the heat, right? So, katha is like that. At least the benefit is that when you hear all that things, there is a feeling that, there is, Krishna is there, there is a process of liberation, and there is some hope for shanti or samadhanam, peace. And this has to be heard, at least this has to happen from the childhood, right? So that Brahma Vidya parambara, we have seen the disappearance of that parambara, the great personalities who were in the beginning, its absence you can see in the society today. You can see that in the society today, right? So, and the knowledge that has not come in the parambara, it will not be effective also. In the modern world, you can see everybody's situation, right? So, why this is important is, this Brahma Vidya should be spoken in the way the rishis have done it. There is no, you cannot change that. The rishis have adopted a system in the Guru Shishya Parambara, Guru Shishya in that way, disciple situation, right? In the same way it should be spoken, and it should be heard in the same way. And if you start changing it based on the change of times, due to that you have changed the system, right? And based on the people, the listeners are different. They are not able to do it in that way. So to adjust to the listeners, if you start doing like that, it won't work. It simply won't work, right? So you can understand this. Why? You look at the nature in the world, Prakriti. Prakriti itself, if you look at it, you will see there are certain plants which are used in Ayurveda for different treatments, for different illnesses, right? Those plants, they were born long ago, and they are still, new plants are coming out, and they are still the same. They have the same capacity to cure the disease, certain diseases, right? So, if you are not able to use the parambara system properly, then that's your problem. It's not the parambara's problem. That because you have tried to alter everything to suit your way of life and your needs, then it will not work, right? Similarly, you look at the world, the sun is the same sun which you are experiencing millions of years. Similarly, the moon, the night is night, the day is day, and when it rains, right? In the same way, knowledge also, Brahma Vidya also, is a natural thing it is. It's not something you can manufacture and modify and alter it according to suit your needs and conditions. If you start doing that, it's lost. It won't have any effect. Yeah. So that is why. And one who has this Brahma Vidya, he will be very good, effective person in the sense that if he is a doctor, he will be a very good doctor if he knows the Brahma Vidya. And Vivekananda spoke about this very strongly. He said, even if he is a cobbler, he will be a good cobbler, provided he has Brahma Vidya in him. And even if he is a scavenger, You know, he is a scavenger. He will be a good scavenger, he said. Right? So that is why those devotees in the bhakti traditions, when there were many devotees appeared all over Bharat Bhumi at that time, and as we know, the famous devotees in Maharashtra, for example, there was this Ravidas. He was a cobbler. He was a cobbler, right? But he was a self-realized person. And similarly, Chokamela, he was a scavenger, but he was a self-realized person. How does that happen? Yeah. And once, while he was working, there was somewhere where he was working, right? Some building collapsed, and his body got all crushed into that. And only a piece of dead body was lying there, with the bones was all coming out, and he was dead from that, right? So, how to find out his body? There are so many people died in that. How this Chokamela's body, how to find it out? At that time, Namadev comes there, and he pulls out one bone from his body, and he says like this, that because of chanting the holy name, Chokamela has, his body has completely filled with that vibrations inside, right? And he took the bones into his ear and listened to it, and he could see the name of the deity in Pandharpur, Vithala Vithala, he was chanting, was coming out from the, sound was coming out from the bones, right? So, now he was a scavenger. You can imagine in the society what his position is, right? And Ravidas was a cobbler. None of these people built any ashrams. They didn't build any ashrams, right? And this Ravidas apparently has spoken to Mirabai, and that story is also there. This is in, and similarly about Tukaram, he was a grocer, right? So many stories like that. This is all in Maharashtra state, what you hear these things, right? In the same way, in several other places also, who were less known, because they were not into propaganda and they were not into recognition in the world. These people we get to know because they have somehow or the other, well known in that area. And that's how others came to know about it. Books were written about it. But you should not think that they were the only people. They were all over the country. They have devotees were there like this. And they were not interested in publicity, followers, recognition and things like that. They were more focused on self-realization. Yeah. So, and their stories are not written down much. People do not know about it so much, right? We have so many people like that. The Travancore Maharaja, Thiruvananthapuram King, he had one manager. He was a superintendent or what you call manager there, right? He was a householder. And he came to his service as the manager there in his palace when he was 60 years old. And he managed things right up to 96 years. He was managing the affairs in the palace, right? So, and he was a great yogi as well, right? So, from him, two mothers, they received instructions from him. They practiced it, Swayam Prakasha Yogini, one of them. She started an ashram later, and and that ashram is still there. So, what I'm saying is that it was not done through propaganda as such. People who had, many people who have taken the knowledge, practiced it, and then stayed at home or in an ashram of their own. They lived like that, right? So this kind of Adhyatma Parambara has happened all over the country in different places, right? So you can see in every state, if you look, you will find this person who wrote this Kaivalya Navaneetam. There is a book, Vedanta book. He has also come like this. From nowhere, they took the message, practiced it and realized it. That's what they did, right? What I'm saying is that they were serious about it. In other words, they had that strong vasana inside for spiritual life. And they had the good fortune of meeting a realized soul. Through their association, they took the instruction seriously, practiced it, and they realized it in due course, right? So, Vedantam, Shravanam process is like that. So, it is through them that this knowledge survived in the nooks and corners of the country, in different villages, and people, it's not through institutions that this happened. It all happened through individuals, more than institutions, right? So, so, Vedavyasa Maharshi did not think that Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam will spread in the world through institutions. He didn't think like that. You can see, if it was like that, he would have said that. He didn't say that. He knew the way it will go into the world is individuals who takes it and who practice it, and through them it has to stay. Right? So, the reason why we have to say this is that spiritual life, spirituality, you can say, does not require an ashram or does not require an institution. Neither. Right? And in their times, every house was an institution for spiritual practices. Every house, it happened. In house, it was taken seriously. And this Sanatana Dharmam, it survived in this world so long, is not through institutions. If you think about it, you can see. Institution is a modern thing. In the last 50 years, 60 years, institutions have come, maybe maximum 100 years. How did it survive all the way from the beginning up to then? Institution is a modern thing. So, Sanatana Dharma, how did it survive then? Through home, through families, through the training at home, through the knowledge what was given to them and what they took from their elders in the traditional method, it survived like that, right? When institutions comes in, then committee comes in, then there is argument for position, fighting each other. And they want court cases happen and all kinds of problems. So many court cases goes on all over the world from the institutions, right? So, sometimes you may get the impression that up to a limit, it is somewhat helpful, these institutions. You may think like that. But you will notice that once the people who got their positions in the institutions and they got their chair and well established in the chair, then there won't be any more further spiritual life there. What will happen is mutually they will be arguing each other about different things. So, Adhyalpam means Brahmavidya or Adhyalpam has to come as parampara from through families. That's the only way it can stay in this world. If it is not there, it's not there. That's all. And that is the biggest problem today. Why did these institutions come? Because the families have broken up. Families have lost that traditions. Yeah. Children, as he said, modern education system, everything. But typically, historically you can say that every village and every home was an institution for spiritual life, right? Parampara, parampara, in that way it has come. So, somehow or the other, in this tradition, even the other faith, Christianity, Islam, they also became a part of this, Sanatana Dharma, in this way. Because they also followed in the same tradition. They also didn't have institutions. Institution is something that has come from the West and started like that. Otherwise, if you look at the Christian families and the Muslim families also, there also, their way of educating their children in their faith was also through families, not through institutions. Yeah. Added to that, even in the Sanatana Dharma itself, We had Shaivam, Vaishnavam, then Ganapatyam, Kaumaram, Sauram, all different faiths, all blended together into the Sanatana Dharma. They were all there. Devotees of Shiva, that is Shaivam, Vishnu, Vaishnavam, Ganesh worshippers, Ganapatyam, Subramanya's worship, Kaumaram, and similarly sun worshippers, Sauram. They were all there, right? And among them itself, there were so much problems between them, between these different traditions also, right? Similarly, we have problem, Dvaitis won't agree with the Advaiti. And Vishishta Dvaitis won't agree with Dvaiti or with the Advaiti. They won't agree, right? In this way, mutually a lot of disagreement among the, within the different traditions also. And mutually they used to quarrel, argue each other. And all these things, different traditions, they all together came under one umbrella called the Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana Dharma is a conglomeration of all these things. These different traditions, different faiths, and different processes they followed, right? So, so therefore, even Christianity and Islam, who may not agree with Sanatana Dharma, they also happen to be a part of these traditions. It happened in that way, right? Whether you agree with or not, that's another thing. But they also got included in this, right? For example, so many rishis and prophets, they were behind these different traditions. And it is in that Sanatana Parampara that everyone has come in that traditions, right? And the Sanatana Parampara or Rishi Parampara, it is called, right? The greatest contribution what the Sanatana Parampara has given is Vedam. Is Vedam, right? And the essence of Vedam is this Vedantam. Vedantam is the essence. So Vedantam means what? Vedantam means the end of knowledge. End of knowledge, right? And where will the knowledge end? Knowledge will end when you get to know the knower. One who is inquiring that person. That's where the knowledge ends. You see? And so, normally, what is happening in our life? We are inquiring, we are trying to get knowledge from outside, right? And all things outside we are inquiring about it. And if you keep on doing this, finding out various things outside, and if you are following that through all along your life, it will never come to an end. It will never come to an end. So that means knowing things outside all the time, instead of turning the attention towards the person who wants to know it, the knower in other words, till your attention turns towards the knower, this process will continue. Which one? Trying to find about the world outside. To know about other things, right? So, in other words, the modern science and the modern education, everything, is all based on this principle that you want to know more about the world outside, right? And our Shraddha is in the world more than in the person who wants to know that. That question is not coming to them. They are not asking this question. Who wants to know these things? Who is that who is asking? He wants to know. That inquiry is not happening, right? So, whereas all the Shraddha is knowing things outside separately from him. Instead of finding out who is the one who wants to know, his Shraddha is only on the things what is outside separately from him, what is existing. Just like they give the example, so suppose you have mustard, and suddenly you drop mustard, it will go everywhere. It's not. Similarly, in the same way, and it will bring or collect all the mustard which has fallen on the ground. It's very difficult because it's so small, and it is goes, rolls, and goes, spreads everywhere. In the same way, we have fallen, our Shraddha has fallen into Prakriti now. or fallen into prakriti. It has not fallen inwards into the us, into the real self. Our Shraddha has fallen into the world outside, and we can see that, but we can't see the person who is seeing these things. Attention is not going towards the person who is seeing that, right? He can hear things, but who is hearing is not able to give attention towards him. So, and modern science has never thought about this, that who is the one who wants to know, who is inquiring about it, right? So, all our knowledge is therefore outside in this world. We know a lot of things about the world. We have collected a lot of information and we think that we have a lot of knowledge. But that knowledge will continue like this forever, this inquiry about the world outside. It will never come to an end. That's a problem. Whereas, what Vedanta is saying is that if the attention has fallen on the knower and if you get to realize he, who he is, there it will end. There won't be further inquiry about it anymore. So, that is the difference between Vedantam and the mundane knowledge, what we have pursuing now, right? So, our attention is in the world outside, and in this world, if you observe carefully, you will see there is happiness there, there is distress also, right? Suppose you tell anyone that there is full of distress, there is only distress in this world, people won't agree with that, right? People who are in distress, they may probably agree with that. There is a lot of distress here, right? Some people will say there's a lot of happiness in this life. A lot of people say like that, is it not? They say there's a lot of happiness here, right? They will show you so many people are happy in this world. They are not suffering. Why do you say that there's only distress in this world, right? And you are still saying distress, distress, why? So, till he gets it, distress in life, he won't agree with that. He will always say that there is happiness in this world, right? So, only when we get the distress, that is when you realize that there is distress in this world, right? Gradually, little by little, when the body starts cheating you, when the body gives you so much trouble, and you become helpless about this body, right? Or when the world is leaving you, in other words, you're feeling helpless in this world, then you may start accepting that there is distress in this world. Otherwise, people won't accept it. If you tell an average person who is young, running around everywhere, making money, trying to enjoy senses, you tell him there is distress in this world, it won't get in, right? So, but the fact is that the sukham, dukham, both are present in this world. Actually, what is distress? Distress is nothing but an after effect of sukham. Dukham is an after effect of sukham, it is, right? So, material nature or prakriti, she will give you some sweet rice in a nice pot and and you are tasting it. That is life. You are enjoying that. What prakriti has given, sweet rice in a nice silver pot. You are enjoying that. And then she says to you, how was it? You say, yes, it was very, very nice, you say. Then she is saying to you, I have put a little bit poison into it. That's how prakriti is. Yeah? So, and after eating that whole sweet rice, you tell me how you feel. While you are eating, it was very tasty. But when the after effect of that comes, that is when you get to realize the poison that was inside that. Yeah. By then it is too late. It's already late, right? So just like when the house is burning, there's no point in going and trying to dig the well for water, right? So in the same way, old age it is a bit too late to do anything about it. Already most of the things are finished now in life. Practically there is not much hope to do anything about it, right? And therefore, if you want to escape from this, intelligent person should learn these things, and that is what that Vivekam means, discrimination power, and he should look for the way how to escape from this situation where we have landed now, in the situation where we have ended up, right? Some people who are very fortunate, they come to this world, and before they get trapped in this world, they will look for the way to escape from here. Before they get trapped here, they will look for a way to escape from here, and they will jump out and get out of this, right? Some people, they'll get trapped, but then somehow or the other they manage to escape from this, right? So that is a way. At some point in time, you have to get out of the grip of this world, right? To recognize that there is distress in this world, there is problem here, there is pain here, and that is why Krishna said that, anityam asukham logam imam prapya bhajasvamam, Bhagavad Gita. So we are not even accepting that. Where is the question of we going to listen to Krishna then? When Krishna is saying to us very fundamental thing, anityam asukham logam, world is temporary, world is full of miseries, imam prapya bhajasvamam, he is saying, isn't it? So, and that's how Krishna sees this world in that way, right? And you won't be able to change that, because the manufacturer himself is saying about the world, right? And so the manufacturing defect of Krishna has already spoken, that the world is like that. Anityam asukham logam, right? So, in other words, he is saying that shanti or peace, what you are looking for, you won't get it outside. There is distress outside. And if that realization comes, if it is like that, this abhravidya is all very limited. You see, abhravidya, I tell you, you have to take a little bit thinking about it to get into the head. Right? Otherwise you won't understand this, what Krishna is saying there. That abhravidya, what is all this education, what we collected in this world, done in the degrees and all kinds of things, what we got. And we still think that this is knowledge. And that is avidya itself. But we are not able to accept it. We will send our children to the same thing. They will also send their children to the same thing. And this avidya will continue to grow within us. Yeah. And when we realize that, when what Krishna has spoken, that this abhravidya is nothing but avidya, right? And which means that from abhravidya you won't get shanti. That's the first thing. From abhravidya, what we need is shanti, peace inside. That shanti won't come from abhravidya, and that we won't accept it. That's why we are chasing them again after that, right? So, abhravidya is limited, right? So, in this situation, completely immersed in abhravidya, which we are all, completely immersed in abhravidya, when we get to hear that there is another vidya, paravidya, which is not touched by these problems of abhravidya, and when you get to hear that is when you wake up spiritually. Otherwise you are not even woken up spiritually. Completely bogged down by this abhravidya and thinking that everything is fine with this. And in the middle of that, Upanishads are saying that brahmavidya is different, because shanti comes from brahmavidya. That is why in Upanishad says, Bhadram Karnevi Shrunyama Devaha. That what does it mean? Bhadram Karnevi Shrunyama Devaha. That means I just want to hear things what will make my life auspicious. In other words, I want to hear only that. I don't want to hear the other ignorant things, abhravidya. I don't want to hear that. I only want brahmavidya to come to my ears, right? So which is auspicious for anyone. And this knowledge is available in the world, and that is the most auspicious news. that such a knowledge is present in this world. You know, people, what happens is, they get used to this religion business, and they start thinking, oh, my religion, your religion, his religion, and all these things comparing each other. This is all useless. What we require is there a way to escape from this mess? That is our concern, right? Spiritual life is for that. You see how Krishna has put it. Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi is your problem, not other religions. Other religions are not our problems. Our problem is Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi. Is there any way of coming out of that? Sanadana Dharmam, rishis have spoken from that position. They are not too bothered about what goes on in this world with other faith, what he said, this religion said, that religion said, and according to my religion, according to your religion. All this kind of arguments has no meaning, practically. First thing is to recognize there is suffering. Is there any way of escaping from this and get the shanti inside? Is there a possibility of getting it? That question, yeah? So Rishi's answer was that is why through Upanishads what they are saying is that there is a vidya, and that is Brahma vidya. Brahma vidya is, if it is understood properly and the message is taken seriously, you can also escape from this mess. From this mess, right? So if you look into Mahatma's life, you will see that how they, at some point in time in their life, they became free from this entanglement. How they, and they have come obviously with that vasana inside, right? Vivekananda was the best example for that, yeah? When he was born, as a child, he wandered around everywhere. But he had one nature in him. It was very easy for him to sit quietly and engage in meditation. He was able to control his mind, senses, and able to sit in one place and go into meditation mood, right? And he used to call other children together and they sit together and meditate. And at that time, when he was playing with other children, the other children will stay for some time. They couldn't do it for a long time. They will give up and they will wander away. But Narendra, who was known as Narendra at that time, he used to sit there like a statue. For hours together, he could sit like that. Even at that early age, young age, right? So apparently when he was doing that, once a snake came into his lap and then moved on from there, and he didn't know about it. That is how focused he was in the spiritual life, right? And who he met, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa later, Paramahamsa says about him that he doesn't have to meditate on anything. Meditation is his nature. That was his nature, dhyanam. Right? So, what we have to understand is, rishis were not there only in the time of Vedam, Vedic times. They have come in the modern times also in different forms. Yeah. So, this very nature also, Ramana Maharshi had the same nature. Always in a meditative mood. Not absorbed in the world, more absorbed in the inside world. Inside thing, right? So, he had a friend, Ramana Maharshi had a friend, and when they were childhood times, if you read about them, you'll see there that Venkatraman was his name. He used to sit there peacefully, without affected by anything. His friend used to find it very difficult. He had that vasana in him to play. So, one day Ramana Maharshi told his friend, "You sit there like me and do some meditation. Let's do meditation." He sat for a few minutes and then he said he can't do it. He got up and walked away from there, right? So, and when he looked back, he saw Maharshi was sitting there, totally not affected by anything, right? So, so they are people who are born with it. And Vivekananda has also, when he came to see Paramahamsa first time, he was 16 years old, and he asked Vivekananda that, "How do you sleep with this nature, what he had, right?" So Vivekananda says to him, "When I sleep, when I lie down in the bed, immediately I feel some brilliant effulgence in my when I close my eyes and I go to sleep, he said. So he used to think everybody sleeps like that. Vivekananda was thinking like that, right? So among ordinary people itself, what I'm saying is, among ordinary people itself, there are people who are different from us. Yeah? Different from us. Yeah. So in everybody, Antaryami is there. The Chaitanyam, which is consciousness or Chaitanyam, Antaryami is present in everyone. And then Antaryami wants to come out and it wants to express itself through every jiva, right? And you also have to notice that everybody in this world are in different planes of existence, So, and because these different planes of existence we are in spiritual life, that is the reason that it comes out in us, it comes out in different ways. For example, sometimes we get attracted to some books to read, spiritual texts. Sometimes we like to go to satsangam and to listen something. Where that inspiration coming from inside? There is a certain level of existence inside that something inside us is telling, where will I find that shanti? Everybody wants shanti only. Because we don't have it, and that is why we are looking for that in the world outside, in different ways. Some people do different things, right? So, thinking that one day I will get shanti. Shanti is the one what everybody is looking for. You can't deny that. Krishna has also said that in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Bhoktaram yajnatapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram sukhridam sarvabhudanam jnatvamam shanti mruchyati, he's saying. In three places in the Bhagavad Gita you will notice, talking about shanti. Similarly, Ishvara sarvabhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi brahmayan sarvabhudani yantrarudhani maya tameva sharanam gacha sarvabhavena bharata tal prasadal param shantim, he's saying. So why is Krishna talking about shanti so much? We are not even able to understand Krishna, even in that level, what to talk about it. Krishna is telling us, this is what you need, and we are still thinking, is that what I need? I need enjoyment. Krishna says, no, enjoyment means suffer. Enjoyment will be followed by suffering. So, basic level, we are finding it difficult to understand Krishna. When Krishna is saying to us, Rishi Shukabrahma Rishi is saying to us, Tata param shanti mubaydi sakshal, Ekadasha skandam, you will see. When he talks about Kavya Maharshi, I think, or Hari, one of Kavya or Hari says that, Tata param shanti mubaydi sakshal. So shanti is what the goal is, to get to that state of shanti. Tata param shanti mubaydi sakshal. So that understanding is not coming, first of all, to people that I'm looking for shanti. But in our madness, we go and look for everything. Somewhere we want something. So what we do, we go on pilgrimage, we go to the temples, we go for satsangam, we read books, and we will think, is there a Mahatma whom we can talk to? In this way, our mind is always probing for something. Somewhere. That means you are not full inside. You are empty inside. That's why you want it. Is it not? We are all like that. So, basically because the shanti, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, as well as in the Bhagavatam, as well as in the Upanishads, we have not understood its meaning, what shanti means, right? So therefore, that people do different things. People, just like we will go to Himalayas for pilgrimage, right? And Saptaham, all it is for this purpose only. Right. Something you are searching for, you are not getting it. So you are going to all these places, you go on pilgrimages, you go on to Saptaham, and you go to Satsangam, things like that. So, let me explain to you this, because this is an important thing, why this is such a difficult thing to understand. Vivekananda, at the age of 16, he started reading the Western philosophers. Yeah? He started reading Western philosophers, right? And when he started reading Western philosophers, because you have to remember at that time the British were ruling India, and the intellectual class of the society were affected by the English language and its English education, right? And he started reading the famous Western philosophers like Hegel, Kant, Nietzsche. They are all German philosophers. They are the famous philosophers in the West. Later on, Russell and all that. So, he read those books, right? He read those books. And then, he started thinking about it. You have to remember, he had, coming from a previous life itself, very strong vasana in the spiritual path. Somehow or the other, he was born there, in that particular situation, and he was exposed to these books, to read them, right? And after that, Vivekananda says about that, if you read his own book, writings, he says that, you should never read books written by people who are not self-realized, he said. Only those who are realized self in spiritual life, only those books should be read, not any other books, and threw away all other books. He got so confused with reading them, the philosophers, great Western philosophers' books, right? So, he did not encourage the other brahmacharis and sannyasis in the ashram to read magazines and, you know, the different kinds of journals and things were being published by different groups. And they will, the magazine who are publishers, they want somebody to write something for them and they will publish it. That's how it is. There's so many different types of magazines in different languages it was written, right? So, and they, in order to publish a magazine, they need some articles. So they will ask somebody to write some article and it will be published. And once it is published and distributed, people will read it naturally and they will all get confused with that. So Vivekananda put a break onto that. He said that this is useless, waste of time. Unless you study books written by the realized souls or the authorized Vedic literature, one shouldn't read anything else. He put a stop on that. Yeah. So, there was a famous Bhagavatam speaker, Kripananda Warrior. This Kripananda Warrior, he says that there is a specific process in spiritual path of self-realization, right? And those great personalities who have gone in that path and realized the truth, right? They don't have any doubts about it. They don't have any doubts about it as the path is concerned. What that path is, they don't have any doubt about it. Kripananda Warrior says that, yeah? The way he puts it is, he has taken that verse from the Viveka Chudamani, and he says this, that when a disciple goes to the spiritual master, how that conversation went with them, Shrotriyan avrijino akamaha to yo brahma vittamaha brahman ubarada shanto nirindhana ivanala ahaituki dayasindu bendu anamatam satam. This verse Warrior, Kripananda Warrior, quotes that, and he says that, right? He says that the disciple says to the guru, Swamin namaste nata loga bandho karunya sindho padidam bhavabdho mama atmiya kadacha drishtiya shriyanti karunyam sudhabhi vrishtiya. He is saying, addressing to the realized master, he is saying to him that I have caught up in this cycle, birth and death. Strictly speaking, these four things, janma mrityu jara vyadi, this is our problem in this world. So we have to start appreciating and recognizing that that is our problem. So that is the problem, and shanti is what we are looking for in this world. Yeah. So this person, the disciple asking the guru, that I have fallen into this ocean of birth and death. Is there any way out? He's asking that, right? And durvara samsara davagni tattvam dodhuya manam duradrishta varte bidam prapannam paripahi mrityu sharanyam ananda ahamnav jane. This is the way the disciple is saying to the guru. I don't know anything, what I can do about it. Yeah, bidam prapannam, I am frightened about life in this world. I am frightened, like the way Buddha spoke. I am frightened about life in this world. We are not frightened, are we? We don't feel any fear about life. Everything is very comfortable. As long as there is food to eat, a place to sleep, we are satisfied. Where is the fright? But this is the state of the mind of a disciple who is endeavoring for Brahma Vidya. Who is endeavoring for Brahma Vidya, right? Durvara samsara davagni davagni tattvam. That samsaram and durvaram, difficult to overcome, right? Save me from death. And then shando mahando nivasandi sando vasandava lokahitam charanta tirnam swayam bhima bhavarnavam jana ahedun anyananabi tharayanta. He says, the guru is saying to the disciple, there are good souls, very calm and magnanimous they are. He is referring to the rishis, who only wanted to give help to those who wants to escape from this situation, right, of birth and death, right? And that is when he says there, you don't have to be frightened about it, because there is a way out. There is a way out from this cycle of birth and death. So, in spiritual life, people come to spiritual life initially when suffering comes. That's when they take to spiritual life. Everybody is like that. There are only very few people who come to spiritual life from an early age due to the purva vasana from previous lives. That's a very rare thing. Majority of the people in this world, due to suffering, they come to spiritual life. But when they come to spiritual life, they don't know what they are looking for. Temporarily, they want a relief from suffering. So therefore, they will adapt to any process what has been given to them. Straight away, they will accept it. And they will try that for some time. And if there is some relief, they will slowly come back to their original way of life and be satisfied with that again. So there's not much progress happens in them. So when you go in the May, it is spoken, like here, right? The guru is telling the disciple, don't be frightened about life, right? there is a way out, he says. There is a way out from this. I did not invent this. The rishis have found out this process. I did not invent this. The rishis have found out this process, right? I can show you that path, what they have shown to me. There is no need to not to be frightened about it, right? So this kind of confidence for somebody to say like that, that self-confidence, right? That feeling like that. That confidence is born out of truth. Because of following the truth and practicing it, from that he realized it, there's a way out from this cycle of birth and death. And therefore, Vivekananda says at that point, he says like this, that one who has realized it, he won't have a problem in delivering it to somebody properly, right? So, all he said, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and all other Vedantic texts, this is Vivekananda's words, all other Vedantic texts, all of them should not be spoken in the light of the Western philosophers. He has put it a very strong break on that. He has very strong feelings on that, because what happened to him was, He read those books, what was written by that, and he found out where things have gone wrong with them. As I was saying, that they find it difficult to accept the laws of karma. Yeah? It is not given to them. Krishna has not given that understanding of karma in their psyche or whatever you call it, the mind. Their mind cannot accept the laws of karma. When we tell them about Prarabdham, Agamam and Sanchitam, they will talk about it, but within them, when they see in the world outside, when they see the disparity among people, and you say that it is due to Prarabdham, they can't accept it. This is their problem. This is a big problem, because if you don't accept the laws of karma, that why, Prabhupada used to ask another question back to them. Prabhupada's question was, why different people are taking birth in different bodies? Give me an explanation for that, if you know. We are saying the laws of karma is responsible for that. People are getting different types of bodies. Female body, male body, different species. So living entities are coming in different types of bodies in this world. Give us an explanation for that then. If your science is so advanced, and if you find difficult to accept this principle of laws of karma, give me an example, explanation for that. That was Prabhupada's argument about it. And exactly that's what Vivekananda is saying here. Vivekananda is saying also that a lot of things in the Sanatana Dharma, what the rishis have realized, you cannot subject that to your intelligence and start coming up with an answer for that. You won't get an answer. There is no answer to that. And Krishna has also said the same thing. Gahana karmano gadi, is it not? Karma, you can't explain that, but it is there. That's all. That's the way you have to accept. This is how you accept Shastram. There are many things in Shastram, your intelligence, my intelligence may not be able to understand it. That is due to the intensity of Sattugunam in the rishis. They were able to explain it like that. You remember in the Ekadasi Skandam, when Uddhava asked Krishna one question, what was the question? Question was this, why there is so much a disagreement among the rishis itself? And Krishna's answer was, due to the difference in the Sattugunam in them. So, people with less Sattugunam, they will see so many different Tattvams in this world. People with the higher Sattugunam, they will realize there is only one Tattvam here. That is why one Tattvam, Krishna said, is spoken in the form of 5, 7, 9, 11, 14, 28, different Tattvams have come out of that. It's 19 chapter, in the 11th canto, 19-20 chapters. So, you have to think in a different way, like just trying to use intelligence in everything and try to think that it doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to you. Why? Because you are not able to understand this laws of karma properly. So, it is the same thing with prakriti also, maya. When we say to them, sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam, based on that only varna dharmam was developed. Varna dharmam is based on sattugunam, rajogunam, tamogunam. When tamogunam is very intense in a person, he is a shudra. It is not purely based on birth. But the other faith people, they find that difficult to accept. Everybody should be equal, they say. Everybody cannot be equal. That's not possible. Then one who is in sattugunam, higher sattugunam, and one who is the lowest tamogunam, how can you mix them together? And say, so the three modes of nature they can't accept, the laws of karma they can't accept, and then they are trying to evaluate Sanatana Dharma. Where will that end up with? So this is the situation. So here, he is saying this to, Vivekananda is saying this, I'm not saying this, Vivekananda is saying this, he is saying this, that the trying to understand Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, all through the eyes of the Western philosophers, Paschatya Darshanam, he says, it should not be spoken. One reason for that is big difference between the mind. Mainly because, you see, especially through the eyes of the science, through the eyes of the science, right? Science has not come to a conclusion yet, is it? Science is still going on, research, new inventions, new knowledge, and then still it's not coming to an end. Whereas Vedam has come to an end. That's the difference. That's what's called Vedantam. Why it's called Vedantam? Because knowledge has come to an end, there is no more research after that. Research is finished. Whereas science is concerned, research is not over yet. You see the difference between Vedantam and the science. Science is saying that we will still further do the research and we will find an answer in future sometimes. And it has been going on for hundreds of years now and it has not come to any conclusions. So only when it comes to a conclusion you can say this is it at the end, right? So therefore, Vedantam, which says the end of Vedam, right, has not happened to the science. No andam for the science. Science is going on, right? And it is not finished. And if it has to finish, if science has to finish, what has to happen is that it has to come to the person who is looking for the knowledge, which is self-realization. Science will come to an end only when it stops this inquiry in the world outside and turn the attention towards the person who wants to know it, which is the Antaryami or the person inside, and that is known as self-realization. And that is where Vivekananda or Narendra, as he was called then, disagreed with the Western theology. He couldn't accept it anymore. Right? Because he said there that till you get to that inquiry of the person who wants to know that, this Shanti will never happen. So Shanti is the goal ultimately, as Krishna said that. Shanti is the goal. And in order that Shanti to come, science has not come out with any answer for that. Science doesn't have an answer. You know what science has done, isn't it? It has put us into this awkward situation with science, invented a lot of things, messed up everything, and developed all these kinds of hellish weapons. And they are using it each other, and then they are feeling that they are very advanced. Now what are you supposed to say to them? If this is what science is offering to us, whatever little Shanti we had, that also gone with this development work, with so much research and development, what they have brought back. Yeah. So science has not succeeded in that. And again, science is not going to give up. They are still busy with the space explorations and moon travel, Mars travel. All these projects are going on. Billions of dollars are spent on that. And encouraging other countries also, even countries who doesn't have even food to eat, they are busy with this space travel. This is the world, what we are living in, right? So, they are saying in another 20-25 years, we will be able to travel freely to Mars, to Moon, and things like that, right? And these people who are doing that, they are also old people. And they are not thinking that they will die one day and gone from this world, right? So, the science and Vedantam, they are two different routes, right? Science is the Shastram of Bhogam. Do you know what I mean? It's a Shastram of Bhogam, sense gratification. That is science. That's the science of that, right? And it is as a Shastram within your dreams, mental dreams, that you have built it up, that Shastram, right? And in other words, the science is within the, what they call it as, Drishya Prapancham. Drishya Prapancham means, what you perceive through senses, this world, your science is inside that. What you perceive through your senses, that's all. Science is finished, it's there, right? So, and similarly in Vedam also, there is a lot of things in the same way. Indra-Vedam, Yajur-Vedam, Sama-Vedam, Atharva-Vedam, Shiksha, Kalpam, Vyakaranam, Chandasa, Niruktam, Jyotisham. All these things, to a large extent, is like science. Within this world, what we observe here, and is all knowledge related to things outside. And Upanishad has spoken all these things, about these things, right? After saying all these things, Upanishad says, all of this is only sound only, and this vidya, which is avara vidya, will not go with the Brahma vidya. Brahma vidya is superior to all this, right? So in other words, spirituality, which is Brahma vidya, this will not go along with that. That is how they spoke about it, right? So they give this example that sun exists, yeah? And on Amavasya day, if you want to see the sun, you may not be able to see him, right? And Amavasya Adhishtata Devata, or the Devata who is in charge of Amavasya, right? And if Amavasya Devata wants to explain sun, she won't be able to explain the sun planet, right? Sun. In the same way, this knowledge, what Krishna is talking about in Bhagavad Gita, if you spend some time to think about it, you will like it also, where Krishna is coming from, yeah? What he is saying is that this shastram is centered around the drk, not centered around drishyam. Yeah? This is centered around drka. Drka means the seer. The seer. It is centered around the seer, not centered around the scene. Science is centered around the scene. And this is centered around the drka. Not, science is centered around drishyam. Right? So, now the thing, interesting thing. When you study drishyam, you require proof. When you study drka, you don't need proof. These are things to think about, yeah? That means, for drka, drka means the seer, for drka, the pramanam, or the, what you call the proof, is only drka only. For drishyam, you need pramanam, right? Drka doesn't require pramanam. Pramanam means proof, yeah? You don't require proof for the drka. So, so Vedam also, in a similar way, accepting this principle, that means, drk is pramanam, means atma is pramanam. So, accepting atma is pramanam, Vedam was spoken. In other words, the authority of the Vedam is also dependent on the drk, on the antaryami, right? So, therefore, Vedam also is not authority for Atma. Atma is the authority. Soul is the authority, right? So, Atma is pramanam for Vedam. But Vedam is not pramanam for Atma. That's the way to understand that, right? Because there is Atma inside. In fact, when Antaryami is inside, then you can accept Vedam. But because Vedam is there, from that you won't understand Atma. So when you realize Atma, the self, the immediate effect is that you are able to accept the knowledge of the Vedam. So, therefore, in order to realize Atma, any drishya padartham, any objects in this world is of no use. Is of no use. These all things one has to know when you study Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you won't understand what Krishna is saying. Your mind will come and interpret something and you will accept that. It shouldn't be like that. Because as Krishna said yesterday, we were saying, Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, Pavitram, Idam, Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmyam, Susukham, Kartum, Avyayam. If you analyze those words, you will see why Krishna is saying like that about the Atma, a body, Atma. So, so what happened was that after saying all these things, Vivekananda has studied Shastram also, and he has studied all these philosophers also. And he started realizing that only thing what I came up with the conclusion was, there is no higher power controlling here. After studying these philosophers, he is saying that, right? And he started feeling there is no higher power in this world. And he also noticed that science was trying to explain this world in its own way. Science was trying, you know, and and this philosophical understanding through Tattva Jnanam, all these kind of things, when they were spoken by the scientifically minded people, those who are influenced by the science, right, they were not able to give any answer to Vivekananda's mind to satisfy him after reading those books. This is, he came up with the conclusions, right? So he said that it was then also the same problem. People, if you say something, they'll say it's a phobia. Or, you know, like they say here now also, phobia or mania, things like that. They will use words like that, right? So what happened was, one psychiatrist went to treat one Swamiji. This is an interesting story. He went to treat a Swamiji, right? So actually, Swamiji was very well versed in Vedantam and all that, right? So this person, doctor also, came to him, right? So he told Swamiji that, you be peaceful, there's going to be a surgery for you. We're going to do a surgery on you. And don't get frightened, he said. So what did Swamiji say to him? He said, if I die, so what? He said, you will also die one day, he said to the doctor. He told the doctor, told him that I'm going to have a surgery on you. So don't get frightened. Hopefully everything will come out okay, he said. He said, I'm not frightened. If I have to die, I will die. But you will also die one day. What does it so much to talk about it, he said. Right? So this doctor thought that this Swamiji is too arrogant, he said. That, and till then, nobody has told the doctor that he's going to die one day. Nobody told the doctor that he's going to die one day. Right? So Swamiji spoke in a very casual way. He said, so what, he said. If I have to die, I will die. You do the operation. If I die, I'll die. And but you will also die one day. He just said like that, right? So, I'm old now. If I have to die, I'll die. You will also get old and you will die, he said, right? Without thinking much, he said that. Without thinking much. What happened was, this doctor, when he heard that, he got a shock that he is going to die. The doctor got the feeling inside, right? So, and he was very absorbed in his life with family and all that, this doctor. He wanted to have his daughter married. The son is not settled in life. So this is all in his head all the time. He is completely bogged down by all the family problems and settling the family and future and pension and mortgage and all such things is in his head. And suddenly this Swamiji says to him, you will also die, he says to him. And that shook him inside a bit. And then he became sick. Doctor became sick for a few days. And after that, the doctor started thinking like that, that Swamiji said like this to me, that I am also going to die. So why am I doing all these things then? This started coming to him, right? So at that time, then he went back to the Swamiji, the doctor. And he said to Swamiji, that you said like this, that that I'll be also be dead and all that. I just could not, I wasn't feeling very happy about that, what you said to me like that. So Swamiji understood that he was very upset about what he said. You know, many people don't like it. If you tell them, they will die. They just don't like it. And they'll get so upset about it. Yeah. So he said to him, no, you will have a long life, but, you know, I have to tell you the truth also, that you will die one day. He put it like this. But you will live long enough to get all your family problems, whatever that is, all sorted out. Right? So the thing is that this knowledge, Bhagavad Gita's knowledge, is not like any other knowledge. For example, what he's saying here is that abhayam pratishtam. How do you become free from fear of death? Fear of death, right? And that is why Brahma Vidya, or sometimes you call it as Vedanta Vidya, right? Swayam Rajade. Swayam Rajade means that Brahma Vidya, except Brahma Vidya, there is no other vidya in this world which gives you shanti as a ultimate goal in life, right? And there is no other shastram in this world which is capable of giving that thing called the shanti inside, right? And this shastram, you cannot invent it. This shastram, you cannot invent it. Because Ishvara, Krishna himself, has revealed it through the rishis who are qualified for that, and within them it manifested, the shastram manifested in the heart of the rishis, and that is how it has come to this world. And therefore this vidya, Brahma vidya, is not something which anyone can feel proud of. Ishvara himself gave it to us, Krishna himself gave it to us through the rishis by manifesting this knowledge within their heart, right? It does not belong to Hindu, it does not belong to Christian, it does not belong to Islam. It belongs to Krishna himself, Brahma Vidya. And he released it through the rishis to this world, right? And they own this Vidya. Brahma Vidya is owned by the rishis, right? So whether we accept it or not, and those who are living in this world, creation, they are qualified to take advantage of this Brahma Vidya. They are qualified to take advantage of this Brahma Vidya. So, and Vivekananda, when he spoke about that, that is how he put it in his lectures also. He said that, I studied different types of philosophies in this world. In his childhood, he had this concept, God exists, Ishvara exists, like that, right? And his mother used to tell him that you have come from Kailasam. They were devotees of Shiva. So how Vivekananda was born? His parents came to Kashi and they lived there for a long time and prayed to Lord Shiva to have a son. And Vivekananda was born after that, in that way. So mother used to say to him always when he was a child that you have come from Kailasam. You have come from Kailasam. And so as a father, mother, and certain amount of people were attracted to logic and reasoning, everything, right? Mother told him, trying to understand is what I'm saying. Mother told him, you have come from Kailasam. This is how mother told him, like that, from the very beginning. And naturally, he was a devotee. She was a devotee, he was, Vivekananda, right? Instead, in the, if you look at it through this way, for example, logic and the modern science, if you look at it. When a child is born, what do you teach them now? That the child is born because of the union of the husband and the wife, and Shukla Shonidam, that means through blood and the semen comes together, and from that the child is born. This is how we teach in the schools and colleges, is it not? How birth happens, the child is born in that way. And in other words, we are teaching a child that he has come from matter. He has come from matter. Shuklam, Shonidam, both are matter. From matter, a life has come, a child is born. This is how we teach in the schools, and the whole education system is like that, right? Now that child, when he grows up in that way, he won't have any interest in the parents. He won't have any interest in the parents, right? Because deep rooted inside him, this is his knowledge. His foundation of knowledge is like this, that a child, he was born from a combination of blood and semen. From that he was born. He does not feel any connection with the father or mother. And if you teach a science like this to the children, what will happen is when that child is born, he won't feel any relationship with the parents. This is the end result of that. Yeah. So they will ask the question, why do I have to take no care of you? What do I have to do for you? You have enjoyed life and I was born. And what do I have to give it for that? Right? So you have to know this in the Upanishads way, how they talk about it. Why it is important is, at that age, what you have put inside will be your foundation for the rest of the life. If you have injected a knowledge like that into a child, when that child comes out, do not expect from him a very higher level of spiritual activity. It cannot happen to him, right? So, therefore, he says here that this same question, in Upanishad they put it. You see how rishis have analyzed it, how this thing they have analyzed it. Yeah? If you look into the Taittiriya Upanishad, how Bhrigu goes to Varuna. There is Bhrigu Valli. Varuna and Bhrigu having a discussion about it. Yeah. So there, Varuna says to Bhrigu that, let us begin, he said. Annam brahmedi vajanat. There is step by step, Varuna is taking Bhrigu to a higher level of understanding about life. About life. A higher understanding. He says everything begins with annam, food. So if you tell the child annam is everything, or from annam comes shuklam shonidam, both, blood and semen, and from that you are born. If you say like that to a child, he stays in that state all the time. Now, Upanishads are saying that is the most gross form of understanding life. Most gross form. In other words, annena jatani jivanti, he says. Annam or food is a very basic thing. Very basic thing. And then Bhrigu, Varuna says to Bhrigu, you have to move further from that. And then he brings him to the platform of the mind, right? So there, platform of the pranam first. Pranena jatani jivanti, he says. Pranena jatani jivanti. Then after that, from pranam, he takes him to the platform of the mind. Then he says, manasa jatani jivanti. And then he goes further than that and says, vijnanena jatani jivanti. And then finally he says to him, anandena jatani jivanti. So from pranamayam, annamayam, pranamayam, manomayam, vijnanamayam, anandamayam. In this way, Varuna taught Bhrigu that don't stay in that level of annam. Annam is the beginning of everything. But you are not that. Annam is not the cause of your... You are nothing to do with that annam. Actually, annam is only an external aspect of that. Annam is not the responsible for you. You are different from the annam. So, if somebody is educated in that way, in this way, through the Upanishad's language, then what will happen is that he start thinking that there is something higher than this annam. Otherwise, he won't think anything higher than annam. Everything will be annam only. So, from annamayam, that's why it's called annamayam, it is called. From annam, you have to come to pranam. From pranam, you have to come to the mind, manam, manasa. From mind, you have to come to vijnanam. And from vijnanam, you have to come to anandam. They are all different levels of our existence, right? So, and Varuna was told by Bhrigu, realizing that anandam and getting established there is self-realization. Otherwise, if you simply stay in the platform of annam, you won't get anywhere. You will stay in the annam level only. So, knowing that as your sarupam, you are born from anandam, and you live in anandam, and you live in, you eventually absorbs in anandam. So, life itself is an expression of that anandam, right? Anandam is Brahmam. Anandam is Ishwara. He said like that. So, Esha Varuni Vidya Parame Vyoma Pradishtita Param. So, when Bhrigu had to go back and reflect on this every time,
And Bhrigu then comes back to Varuna every time, and Varuna explains to him this in this way, right? So, in other words, where is that Anandam? The Anandam is Antaryami. Antaryami, right? So, when you find your center, where it is, right? That is the highest truth. And everything in life becomes meaningful. Whereas if you stay in the platform of Annam only, you won't find any meaning for this life. That is where science is stuck. Science is still stuck on this Annam level. Science is not able to progress towards the Anandam level. Annam, Pranam, Manasa, Vijnanam, Anandam. The different steps. It's not able to come through that, right? So, Bhrigu told Varuna, Varuna said to Bhrigu, that do not stay in the body or the mind, but rest in the eternal truth, which is Antaryami, right? So, Sanadana Dharmam or Brahma Vidya is not centered around the body. Remember that, yeah? Brahma Vidya is centered around that center inside, Antaryami. It is not interested in the body, it's not interested in the mind. Yeah? In the sense that it is telling you how to get there. That is Brahma Vidya. How to get to that center, right? And every one of us, once we realize that we are then Antaryami, we have become parts of Krishna then. Krishna is an Antaryami inside, right? So, Vivekananda said like this, that his mother was the first guru for him, and because mother always told him that you have come from Kailasam. And because they didn't have children, they wanted to have a child, so they went to Kashi, and they chanted Panchaksharam Namah Shivaya to please Lord Shiva, and that is where he was born. Vivekananda was. That's how he was born, right? And his original name is Visheshwara. Lord Shiva's name was given to him. Narendra was a later name given to him at home as like a pet name called like that. So whenever Narendra was behaving very, you know, as a child when he was misbehaving, the mother will tell him. That he will say like this, I pray to Vishwanath to come and you have sent one of your people from the Bhudagadam or one of your Bhudagadam had sent it to me. Like that his mother used to say, jokingly about him, right? So, because Vivekananda was given that feeling that Lord Shiva has blessed him, was born from Shiva's blessings, that helped him to think differently. Whereas if you had sent him to a place where you are told that you are just a combination of a blood and semen, and if you have grown up like that, where is the possibility of understanding spiritual life? How can that person understand spiritual life? Right? So, if you bring up through people teaching them these molecules and atoms, ultimately what will come out is atom bomb and nuclear bomb only from them. If you teach children that these are the most important things in life, atoms and molecules, when they grow up, because they have grown up around these atoms and molecules, what they will produce will be atom bombs and nuclear bombs. This is what I'm saying, that how important that is when you lay the foundation inside. If that foundation is not right, you will build up all false understanding about life. And this is the biggest problem today. Modern generations have to face this, right? So, whereas, like Vivekananda's mother planted in him that feeling that Shiva is there, Kailasam is there, and he is one inside you. Like we say, Krishna is inside, his mother taught him Shiva is inside. That Chaitanyam is inside, Vivekananda was affected by that. He caught on to that, right? So it is important to inject that spiritual understanding at the early days in life itself, right? At the early days itself, right? So in order to do that, you got to talk about spiritual life to them, and this is what they received in the, at home. Remember what we started today, the classes, that it was not through institutions it was done, because most of the time children are at home. And at that time, if the parents have injected this understanding into the children's mind, it will never leave them. Even if you send them to other schools, it won't happen, right? So, it is only for that purpose, because children are very imaginative. Bhavana mandalam. They will think a lot of things at that age. When you get older, your bhavana mandalam changes. When we are young, our bhavana mandalam is different. Children's imaginations are different, right? So, in that bhavana imaginative world, or their imaginative world, if you fill all that with spiritual knowledge and the shastram and related topics like that into that, right, their mind will accept that easily. Remember what Prahlad said, right? Kaumara acharet prajna dharmam bhagavadaniha durlabham manushan janmam tadapyadhumartadam. So, some people ask this question, why do we need all this katha in the Bhagavadam, all the Puranams and everything, right? They will say you need intellectual thing, everything. Intellectually they want to teach, right? One thing we must remember, all of us, if you look at it, in our daily life, most of the time, we are not in the intellectual platform. We are on the mental platform. Is it not? Most of us are. In a day, if you take, most of our time, we are on the mental platform, not on the intellectual platform. Intellectual platform, once in a way, it may happen like that, right? So, so even in the external world, most of the time is on the mental world, field of mind, right? Which means bhavana mandalam, imaginative world. Mind means imagination, so many things, right? So if that bhavana mandalam, or the field of mind, if that is not pure, if it is not pure, this Vedantam will not get in. That's the problem. Brahma Vidya won't get into that mind if that mental field of mind is not pure. You see, it is a connection like that, right? It is for that purpose the children were given this understanding of Mahabharatam, Ramayanam, Srimad Bhagavatam, and all the stories and the history of all the great Mahatmas who lived in the different spiritual traditions. These were all taught to the children at that age, right? So, and if those imaginations, the children will imagine about that, based on that, right? If they don't do that, what will happen? They will get attracted to the cinema and the television serials and sportsmen, or and their stories will take, if you don't fill them with Puranams and personalities from the Puranam, Bhagavatam, Mahabharatam and all, that will be replaced by the information about the political persons, political personalities, similarly sportsmen, celebrities, film stars, and their history will go into their mind. Bhavana mandalam all children have. And then bhavana mandalam, if you, what you feel there in that is so important. It is from that everything else is built up after that, right? So, and if a child goes up, grows into this life world, then it will be very difficult for him to come to a human level, because he is affected by that world outside, right? And this bhavana mandalam is a necessity of the human mind. So, therefore, what the rishis have done is, body, they have bound the body with karma. And the mind, they bound that with sadhana, with upasana, right? As well as the bhavana mandalam. And that is why the Vrindavanam pastimes, Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavanam, and his appearance, his activities, What purpose has it been spoken in the Bhagavatam? To fill this Bhavana Mandalam. Children's Bhavana Mandalam, to fill that for that purpose, all this was spoken in the Bhagavatam. Right? If you don't do that, what will happen is, what they say is that, if you don't talk about Hanuman, you will talk about Superman or Batman or some other man. So that is the way it is. Yeah. So, or Sulaiman or Rahman, so many other men in this world. If you don't talk about Hanuman, you will talk about all the other. They are all the bigger personalities in this world, right? So children need it. They need it. In their Bhavana Mandalam, they want to feel it. They are like that. All children are like that, right? So when it in themselves, when that energy comes, in Bhavana Mandalam, they require Hanuman, they require Bhima, they require Arjuna. All these things are required. Yeah? That's one side. So Vivekananda said that the after studying all these intellectual philosophers of the West, he said that ultimately what happened to me is that, he said, I felt restless studying all that. Vivekananda said that. Studying all these Western physical, Western philosophers, he said, all what happened to me was, instead of getting any shanti, I feel restless totally. Right? And that is when he gave up everything and came back to Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads. Back again. He was able to do that because of his Purvavasana, obviously. Right? So, he said, for a long time I have fiddled with these philosophers. You see? And then he said that all these, their philosophers, he said, he found the difference. What was the difference? Difference was this, he said. Whatever those philosophers have spoken, first you have to believe it, what they are saying, right? And whereas my mother taught me that he is inside me, Andaryami, taught me that principle, which made more sense to me, he said. Whereas I was accepting everything, different people were giving different philosophical interpretations. And whenever I read that, everything is external. But first time, I remembered what my mother told me, he said, that he is inside me. And that has made me to realize that I have not to be looking for outside rather than the one inside. That's what I should be concerned about. He himself explains this in his own way, right? And I also realized, he said, and that one thing I am looking for, I cannot realize it with buddhi, intelligence. Whereas all others who have put forward philosophy to him, which he has studied, was all on the platform of intelligence. They were putting their logic and trying to convince him about it. Right? So he said, when my mother told me that Shiva exists, Krishna exists, I had no difficulty accepting that. Right? So, but when I studied all these modern philosophers, I started losing my faith in all the Shastram, he said, in the Puranas, right? And not only that, it was disturbing my mind more than any time before. So, and that is a problem with these logicians, you know, who gives you logic and argue with you through logic, trying to convince you, right? So, through logic, what they will do is they will destroy your mind totally, right? And whereas through logic, destroying your distress, that's Vedanta. Vedanta is also logic, but it is done in such Vedanta. What it does is through logic, how to destroy your distress in life, right? So instead of through logic showing to you what distress is, that through logic, how to make one happy in life, satisfied and shanti, and instead of living in this world, because sometimes these logicians, after studying all the logic, they become so disturbed inside, because they are trying to see everything through their logic, isn't it? And with the result that there is no shanti, no peace at all. And they will whole life, they'll keep on talking about this logic, yukti, right? And yukti or logic becomes a disease for them. The science and modern science and logic, they are connected very closely, isn't it? You can see so many times when you look at people who are very intellectually charged, how they argue, right? And sometimes people who are with such a logical nature, they could become interested in spiritual life. They'll come to spiritual life, right? Because they know through yukti or logic what has happened to their own life. Yeah. So, and this is what has happened to Vivekananda, to Narendra, right? And so much logic through these philosophies, he has tried, he involved in that, and he realized that it's not getting anywhere. There is no clear answer, and everybody is putting logic and logic and logic all the time. No answer at the end. And then he realized that this is not going to get anywhere. So, one of the reasons was that he, because of his previous life, in the spiritually, he was a much more developed person. So therefore, through meditation and all, he has experienced some spiritual understanding. That was a jiva. Vivekananda was a jiva like that, right? So, a jiva who has got some taste of spiritual life, when yukti, logic came to him, he lost his peace of mind, what he had. That is why he said, you will notice in Vivekachudamani, Ajari Swamiji says that, you have to know where to stop yukti. Yukti, logic, you have to know where to put a stop to it. After that, you cannot take yukti into account. You see, this is our problem now. Most of our people have, due to our education, and everything has to become logical. And that is what Krishna is going to say in this. And Ajari Swami says that you apply the yukti the way the rishis have spoken. That way you can accept the yukti, not any other way. According to your mind and intelligence, no. That's not acceptable. So, the process in which the Vedam has shown the way, in that way you can apply the yukti. Then it won't cause any problems, right? So, we'll continue after the break. Chedo darpanam arjanam vamaha davadni nirvapanam Shreyakaidava Chandriya Vidaranam Vidyavadhu Jivanam Anandam Budivardhanam Budivada Purnamrada Swadhanam Sarvapna Supanambaram Vijayde Shri Krishna Sangirtanam Namna Amakari Bahuda Nijasarva Shakti Tatrarpida Nimida Smaranena Kalam Yeda Drishita Vakriba Bhagavan Mamabi Turdeva Midrishamiha Janinanuragaham Trinarabhi Shunichena, Tarorabhi Sahishnuna, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari, Nathanam Nathanam Nasundarim, Kavidamba Jagadishakamai, Mama Janmani Janmani Shuri, Pavadal Bhaktirahai Tugitvai, Ainandananuja Kingaram, Padidamam Shami Pavambudo, Kribayatavapada Pangajastida Duli Sadrasham Vichindayam. Nainam galada shudharaya vadanam gadgadiruddhaya gira pulagair nijidam gadavavu tavannama grahane bhavishyari yugaidam nimeshena chakshusha pravishayidam shunyayidam jagal sarvam govinda virahe name ashlishyava padaradam pinashtumam adarshanam marmahadam karotuva yatha tathava vidatha dulambado malprananathastuna evana para Sarvatra Govinda Nama Sankirtanam Govinda Govinda. In this 15th chapter, Krishna begins with an important aspect of spiritual life called Vairagyam. So, all these things Krishna is saying is basic requirement in spiritual path. when you take spiritual life seriously, there are serious aspects of that spiritual path here. That is why if you look at that verse, as in the beginning itself, Krishna is talking about the tree. Urdhvam Ulam Atha Shaga Shvatam. Why is it all spoken? To make us understand what Vairagya means. So as I was saying before, that the rishis have given a logic, method of logic. And that method of logic only you can apply. You can't bring your logic into it. Everybody has their own logic, isn't it? So people who are studied science and technology and all, they will have one kind of logic. And ordinary people, they will have, people who have studied the other things, they will have a different kind of logic. So that logic also, when you apply logic, they insist that it should be based on the Rishi's method of logic. Rishi's logic are different than our logic is, right? So, so logic is called a yukti, logic, right? So, when they're saying that they can't accept anything, rishis are saying, you first accept these conditions. If you are not willing to accept the conditions of karma, conditions of maya, prakriti, trigunam, and all that, then your logic doesn't mean anything to us. That's their position. Rishi's position is like that. You see, the fundamentals you have to accept what they are saying. On that fundamentals they can't... The problem is that most of the time they think that they have so much faith in their intelligence and in their logic that they don't realize it that there are so many forces in the nature working which is not subjected to our logic. Isn't it? You see, that's the problem. That this nature is not working according to our logic. Suppose somebody asks me a question that how come the seasons are coming one after the other in an order? It's coming. What will I explain that? Okay, I can tell what is going to happen in the season. But why seasons have been structured in this particular way? If you ask me a logic for that, I can't give any logic to that. So that shows that logic has its own limitations. Sun rises in the east and sets in the west. If you ask me why not rise in the west and set in the east? If you ask me the logic, what logic can you give? So Prakriti has certain things already established. And there if you come with your logic and start questioning that, it won't work. It's not. It won't work. So that is why rishis are saying to us that you have a limitations where you can apply your logic and there is a method of applying the logic and you can question those things, right? And similarly when we talk about Ishvara and similarly Atma, when we talk about these things, you want logic. Where will I get the logic? How can you give the logic for that? Logic has its own weaknesses also. Right? And when we say this Ishvara, Atma, then similarly about liberation when we talk about, they ask in the same, oh, this is not possible, all that. It cannot, it's not possible. That's how their answer will be. Yeah? Samadhi, Sukham, and all those things, right? So, they will say that, oh, this is all coming from your mind. Mentally, you are making up all these things. Liberation, Ishvara. That is why this, because they have lost, they have not understood these things, therefore they have lost faith in their own shastram also. And atheism has come up, right? So, but even though they may say these are all imaginations, Ishvara, Prakriti, and similarly moksham, Atma, Brahman, when we say all these things, they are saying all these things, is that not to your mental concoctions, things like that, right? So, then you ask a question that, okay, if you accept all these things, let's ask you one question that, when you are disturbed in your mind, why is that you are not able to find any peace inside? you get disturbed, is it not? And that is why you develop war and all other kinds of problems in this world. Why you are disturbed inside? That's what it is, right? So, at least do you accept that shanti is necessary to live in this world? Unless you are in shanti, you will create trouble. You cannot control your mind. You will go out of control and then you will act in a very, there's a volcano inside ready to erupt any time. In everyone's heart, it is like that. So, Krishna is saying shanti is a nature of the soul. It is not the nature of the mind. Shanti is the nature of the soul. So, those things about shanti, inside, you got to learn from your own life. Someone cannot come and put it to you and tell you the importance of that. From our own life, we have to come to that conclusion that I need shanti in life. I need peace inside. And this disturbed state is not normal. It's not that I want to be always in a disturbed conditions. Is there a way out to get that shanti? And so, it is difficult when your mind is controlled so much by intelligence. So much by intelligence, right? Sometimes you can see this, right? That you come to realize that logic is not possible in everything. Logic is not possible in everything, right? And when you look at certain times, sometimes with children, when you see their Shraddha and their Vishwasam, your faith in these things, right? You start thinking, why have I become like this? I am not having the faith. They have got the faith. The children have got the faith. Some children, I'm saying. When you see their Shraddha in spiritual life, when you see that, you start wondering, why am I like this? Right? So, therefore, Vedam says like this, that tattva jnanam, or knowledge of the tattvam, of the truth, after you got it, you remain like children. They say like this, right? In other words, properly tattva jnanam comes to a person, then you should remain like a child. In the Bhagavatam, you remember, in the 24 spiritual masters, Dattatreya Maharshi talked about a child, isn't it? Arbhaga. Arbhaga. This Arbhaga, he says, I'm like an Arbhaga. I learned from him this. Why did he say that? Why did Dattatreya talk about this Arbhaga like a child? Because after realization, his state of mind is that he realized that this importance what you are giving to in life, what the so-called learned, intelligent people, what they think about life and the importance they give to life is not important. That is why he said, like a child I move in this world. Ekadasha Skandam, you will see that. 24 spiritual masters, when he talked about that. He said, I travel like a child, he said. Isn't it? So, why did he say that? Because of this. He said, we, with our intelligence and mind, we have created such a complicated world and we have got caught up in that, not unable to come out of it, right? Intelligence and mind has caught us, put into that prison, and we are finding it difficult to get out of it. And therefore, we are so disturbed. But Dattatreya Maharshi is saying there that I have come to realize it after that this world, this manifested world, with which we have taken it so, because it is perceived through senses, first of all, and we have started analyzing this world and got absorbed in the world to such an extent that now we are finding it difficult to come out of it. And the world has trapped us into Prakriti, in other words. Prakriti has trapped us. So that's what he was saying that, right? So, so you will see this. Vivekananda talks about all these things in his books, He says that, right? At the time when he was small, there was a time the Tagore was there, Ravindranath Tagore. And similarly, his father was there, Devendranath Tagore, Keshav Chandra Sen. All of them, Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar, these are all great personalities who lived at that time in Bengal, right? So, they were all intellectuals, you see, all in fact influenced by the modern educations, right? And in the middle of all that, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa came. His name was Gadadhar. And he came as a pujari in that temple, in the middle of all these intellectuals, right? He was not even educated. Who? Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Paramahamsa was not educated. He didn't go to school. He had no knowledge of anything. But his understanding of life and his realizations were far higher than any of these so-called intellectuals who lived at that time. That is how it turned out at the end, right? So, and from him, from Paramahamsa, a personality like Vivekananda came from him. He was able to produce that without any education, without all this intelligence. How did that happen? So, whereas on the other side, you had the Keshav Chandra Sen, Ishwar Chandra Vidyasagar, and Tagore family, they were all very highly into this education, modern education, intellectual process and all that. They all had to take his shelter at the end, Paramahamsa's shelter. So what I'm saying is that we gave too much importance to this intelligence, and that intelligence itself becomes a problem later to understand spiritual life, Brahmavidya, right? So, you know, this intelligentsia, they call it, isn't it? Intelligentsia, right? And so this Brahmana who came in the Vaidya Parambara, Paramahamsa, right? So he had no higher education. He didn't go to any colleges, universities, nothing, right? And they had land in the village, and due to some land reforms, things happened, right? And they had to, the owner of the land asked them to vacate the land and leave the place. And that's how he left the village and came to the big city, Calcutta. Before that, he was living in the village, right? So, and for his father, he was a third child, and Paramahamsa, when he came, initially he was not attracted so much into worship of the deity in that form, right? But later on, he took to that process of the deity worship, right? And worshipped as Bhadragali. Bhadragali was the form he worshipped. Remember in the fifth canto, where Bharata meets with Bhadragali, isn't it? So, you know, the difficulty is this, that people who cannot understand Vedic literature in the way the rishis have spoken, they will have great difficulty in accepting the form of Bhadragali. Because Bhadragali's form with the skulls and the garland and everything, with the tongue coming out, with the blood, she drinking the blood and all this thing. When one has gone through this education system, he'll find it very difficult to understand all these things, right? So that's where, when Vivekananda meets Ramakrishna Paramahamsa like that, in that situation, right? So they were all fond of eating fish. It was accepted that way. At that time in Bengal, they all ate fish, right? So, it is one of their favorite dishes, right? And they have got this capacity that when the fish jumps in the water, because they're familiar with the fish so much, then they'll be able to tell you what kind of fish that is. They just have to see how the fish moves in the water, they'll be able to talk about it, right? Similarly, in the same way, a lot of people are sitting together, and in that group, if there is one jiva who is spiritually very matured, or in other words, one who has a deeper realization in spiritual life, right? He will be able to influence others, affect others, right? So when Paramahamsa came, and among the people, when he saw Vivekananda, who was Narendra then, Narendra, he said that a few months ago, in my dreams, I felt that one rishi has come to this world. Among the Saptarishis, you know Saptarishis, don't you? The seven rishis. In every Manu's time, there will be a incarnation, Manu, Manu's children, and similarly the rishis, the demigods, devadas, will be there. There are six of them. In every Manu's time they come. So in this particular Manu's time, Vaivasvata Manu's time, Shraddhadeva, in his time, there are Saptarishis. So Ramakrishna Paramahamsa says that, I saw in my dream one rishi had come to this world, right? And he got this darshanam in his dreams. So when I saw this child, he says, he said that rishi, that thought came to his mind, right? Puranams also talk about these things. They are saying that rishis will keep coming to this world at different times, in different ways, right? And even Vedavyasa Maharshi says, in Brahma Sutram, he says, we are not left free like that. sometimes when Srimad Bhagavatam says that rishis could be present here, devadas could be present here, and only thing is, we won't be knowing about them. We won't be knowing about them, their presence in this world, right? That requires a little bit subtle vision is required. And that is when Narendra gets to meet Paramahamsa, right? So Narendra asked Paramahamsa, have you seen God, Ishvara? Have you seen Ishvara? He said. His reply was, the way I am seeing you, I have seen him, he said. That's how he answered that, right? So, and in fact, I have seen him closer than you, he said. Closer than you, right? So, and if we want to see, I can show him also to you, right? So, Narendra says that when I heard that, I could not understand what he was saying. I could not connect with that, what he said, right? And after hearing that, he said, now, this all happened after he has read all these different philosophies and, you know, all the other things, whatever he was reading. And he is asking this question to everybody, have you seen Ishvara? You're all talking about God, Ishvara, and all this philosophy. So where is he then? He was asking this question, right? But after, when Paramahamsa told him, Vivekananda says, that night I slept very well. And I felt that I found that there is some purpose of living. Vivekananda says this, right? Otherwise, what does this life mean in this world? I have eaten a lot of food. I have slept a lot. This eating and sleeping. What else is this life about, right? So, and similarly, every day comes and sun rises, sun sets, another day starts, another day goes. Like this, you pass through this whole day after day, right? And that is why in Bhajagovinda Mahajari Swami said the same thing. Dinayamityo sayam prato, shishira vasando punarayado, kalam kridadi gachadi ayo, tadavena munchadi asha pasham. That is all life is about. Bhajagovindam prayers, you will see these words, yeah? Day and night is happening. Dinayamityam sayam prado. Morning, evening is coming and going, right? Shishiram vasandam. The seasons are coming one after the other. Kalam is playing. Kalak kriyati gachati ayu. And our lifespan is running out. That's all it is. One day everything is finished and we are gone from here. Once for all. Goodbye to all. Yeah? So, after a longer time, what happened? Right? We become old and then the body starts withering out and the life is coming to an end. So, Narendra says at that time that here I went to school and studied all the other kinds of things, right? I went to college, I went to university, I did this, I did that, I got the rank, I got the distinction and all sorts of things, right? And I become like an engineer or a doctor or a specialist in other things, whatever it may be. So, and I got a job with an American corporation. I worked a day and night. I earned a lot of money from that. And by the time I come out after all this, no life left. Just like jackfruit, if you extract the juice from that, then what is left out? Just like the body has become useless, practically. Good for nothing, basically. Right? So, so is this life about? That's what he's saying. Is this life about, right? And so this getting married, having family and all, it is in every species of life. Every species of life. They also have that, having children, grandchildren, all that, right? So they are all considered to be the prakriti dharma. It is in the prakriti all these things happen. Prakriti dharma, right? And that will happen in its own way. And after you have come out all these things, you are retired, after you have gone through this cycle of education and married life and work and, you know, all those things, right? But then at the old age you are thinking, what am I supposed to do now? You are asking the question, there is no purpose. Yeah, there is no purpose, right? So, because adhyatma jnanam, brahma vidya, self-realization, none of them has had gone inside, didn't get inside, yeah? So, bhakti jnanam, all this not a goal anymore. This materialistic life only is the goal in life. How long can you go on with this? You have to ask the question, isn't it? If this materialistic way of life is the only life existence, how long can you continue with this? Right? And from that, how will Shanti come from that way of life? How can that happen? Right? And when Vivekananda says this, that when I realized and when Paramahamsa told me that there is something more than this life, what I am leading now, which is the self-realization, with that I found some goal in life, he says, some purpose in life. Till then I couldn't feel any purpose of this education and all what I have been doing, he's right. So, and that gave me happiness, and therefore I was able to sleep, he said, right? So, to come to that conclusion itself takes time for most of the people, is it not? Because we got conditioned in one way to think that home, family, and comforts, and eating, sleeping, this has the priority in our life. We lived in that way whole life. So when the old age when comes, it becomes very difficult to change from that way of thinking. It becomes very difficult, right? So you will notice in this world, there's only two types of people. And very few people will think outside this framework, outside this system. Only very few people will think differently from that, right? And majority of them are happy with this arrangement, what we have now. So, and who have gone to that seriousness about self-realization, spiritual life and all that, they are very few. And even in Satsangam also, you will find these two category people who are like that. Yeah. Some people, they'll say, let's see what Bhagavad Gita is saying, like with a, you know, in a probing mood. Hmm. And so their Shravanam is different. Their way they do the Shravanam is different, right? But when you get to hear that the whole Shravanam Bhagavad Gita has a goal at the end, and self-realization is that goal, as Krishna mentioned in the last chapter, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadhi, that freedom from that, right? The quality of Shravanam changes. When you realize that, the quality of Shravanam changes, right? Then what happens is, you have got to know the goal of all these things. Goal of Bhagavad Gita, goal of spiritual life. And then the approach will be how to get to the goal. It becomes important, right? And you taking a decision for that, to go in that direction, right? That I have to know this in this life, what Krishna has spoken. So what I'm saying is, when people study Bhagavad Gita, they study at different levels. Some people study it, let's see what Bhagavad Gita has got to say. They are not ready for what Krishna is talking about in the Bhagavad Gita. Or they'll say, they'll look at Bhagavad Gita and they'll compare it with other scriptures, things like that. Brahma Vidya cannot be, you cannot take to Brahma Vidya in that approach. Brahma Vidya tells you the goal, and one has to be focused on the goal, and whatever that is necessary, you have to take it from Bhagavad Gita for that self-realization. That's a way to take to Brahma Vidya. So that's what Krishna is saying here. That, and it is based on that, in Brahma Sutram, Vedavyasa Maharshi says, Athado Brahma Jinyasa, that statement, right? Only at that time you become jikyasu or inquisitiveness, right? And such a person is very fortunate who has got that way of thinking, right? And then he will find spiritual life interesting. But if you execute spiritual life just as a duty or just I have to do it every day, and if I do that way, then it is not done in the right understanding, right? So it is, when it comes to that, that is when you realize the importance of bhakti and similarly bhavana mandalam, all these things. You see, this bhavana mandalam we spoke about, the necessity of that bhavana mandalam, bhakti, all these things you understand when you come to that stage, when you come to that situation, right? So, and so when that bhavana mandalam has not created inside us, and or if you have not got attracted to self-realization and what you are actually looking for, right? If you don't get feelings for that, our feelings will go towards other things. We'll find ecstasy in cinema or in other sports and music and things like that. Our Shraddha will fall into all that. Right. So, so this Bhava Mandalam, what we were discussing, right? If we have understood its importance, why I'm saying this is that a lot of people who have gone through the modern education, they find it very difficult to accept Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Reason is this, that they are saying that how do you know this is all true? That's their first question, right? What Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita, many people have got a lot of problems with it. They are asking this question, how do you know that this is all true? And then also they say, why do we need all these things to live? That means they are not ready for spiritual life. They are not ready for spiritual life, right? So, you cannot change a person to force him to accept Bhagavad Gita. You can't do that. That person should feel the need of Bhagavad Gita in his life. And that need is this vairagyam to come. And that vairagyam is what Krishna is going to talk about first here in this 15th chapter. So you can see in spiritual life, unfortunately, because we live in a different world today, our world is completely devoid of all these things. There is no bhavana mandalam, there is no spiritual life, there is no Ishvara, there is no Atma, there is no Brahman. Nothing is in our... all what we know is how to work hard, earn money, eat and sleep well, and die and go. This is all our life is at the moment, isn't it? There is no higher principles in our existence, is there? So, you have to think in a different way than what Krishna is saying here, right? So, if you have got a taste for Bhagavad Gita, then what will happen is that this attraction for this worldly life will slowly come out from us, right? So, Upanishad will say that yam labdhva bhavadi, matto bhavadi, stabdho bhavadi, tripto bhavadi, almaramo bhavadi. All these things. Narada Bhakti Sutram says that, right? So, Narada Maharshi is saying there, by experiencing that, what? That the mind, you become stunned by that knowledge, you become Atma Rama, and you lose all your taste for life in this world, material life, and all your inspiration or your enthusiasm for material life goes away. And just like Paramahamsa got to the state, an intoxicated state, that you become qualified for Bhagavad Gita. Qualified for Bhagavad Gita, right? So that is what he is saying. So these are all an introduction to this chapter, 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Because 15th chapter is a difficult chapter. Again, I'll tell you that. Compared to lot of things in this 15th chapter, unless you have accepted all these things, you won't understand it. You won't understand it, yeah? Because Krishna spoke about Prakriti before, in the last chapter, 14th chapter, Three Modes of Nature, Prakriti he spoke. In this 15th chapter, Krishna is going to talk about Prakriti and Purusha relationship. What that relationship is between Prakriti and Purusha, right? So, and that area of self-realization and what Krishna is going to speak about now, this is not easy to enter into that, to get into. Theoretically, if I explain that, you may feel it... it's something what you will understand what it is spoken. But why Krishna has spoken that after this 14th chapter, this Purushottama Yogam? And what is this Purushottama? Why is he called Purushottama? All those things which is going to come now. First thing what he did was, Krishna is saying was, that this material existence itself is something to be understood properly. You see, the problem for us is that we got so used to this eating, sleeping business. And we think this is all life means, this eating and sleeping. And because we got so used to it now, when something is spoken from the spiritual point of view, it's not clicking. It's not getting into our head. And then what we do with our intelligence, with the education what we're coming from, we'll start analyzing it. And then we are not getting anywhere. So this chapter, this particular chapter, 15th chapter, Krishna is going to tell us that you should know yourself better first. Where are you at? That means in what state is your life at the moment? That's how he's going to start this chapter. What state of existence you are at? Samsaram. Samsaram means he's considering it as a tree first. And in that tree, where are we in that tree? Right? Our state of existence. And this is sometimes, we may not have never thought about it. where we are at, right? When you read this chapter, when Krishna is going to talk about that, you start realizing where, about whom Krishna is talking about all these things, not knowing that he is talking about us. Even that much, we are not able to connect with what he is saying there. Samsara Vriksham, when he's going to discuss these things, right? So, he says, first of all, you have to know what samsara means. You have to know what samsara means, right? Samsaram, Krishna is comparing to like a tree here. And he's going to begin with that statement here. So, the way to look at that is, when Vivekananda met Paramahamsa, and when they had a conversation, right, then he said, somebody came to see, because spiritual life is something very difficult to explain it also. The happiness what you get from spiritual life, self-realization, everything, right. So, one person came to see him, and I mentioned the story before that he is used to addicted to alcohol, right? So he used to get intoxicated, and when he saw Paramahamsa dancing in the kirtan, he thought that, what is he taking? What is he drinking? He thought like that, right? So, how can I... And then he goes and sees him, asking him, what have you taken? Is it a foreign one or an indigenous one? He asks that question, right? So, that getting intoxicated like that. This is why the books are also like that. You see that book, Shivananda Lahari. Lahari means intoxication, right? Saundarya Lahari, again intoxication. So spiritual life is supposed to get us intoxicated with that spiritual understanding, realizations, right? Ananda Lahari. And similarly, Lahari from the Bhakti, right? So Bhakti means Atmanubhuti, self-realization, right? And that is first-class Bhakti, right? Okay, bhakti, of course, worshipping Krishna in a particular form is also bhakti, right? But that is all in the upasana mandalam, upasana field of sadhana that comes, right? That you cannot deny that, that is there, it is there, right? So, upasana mandalam, in your field of worship, right? And you are worshipping a particular form, and happiness comes from that bhakti, right? But that is one level. But experiencing Krishna in as Antaryami inside, as pure Chaitanyam, and as your very self, and Alpa Anubhavam, that is Parabhakti. Now, Upasana Mandalam, worshipping in the temple, worshipping at home as a deity, and that is not denied, it is allowed. But Krishna does not say that is the ultimate thing. What Krishna is saying is, if you are able to experience Him as Antaryami inside, in our, as your very self, as pure Chaitanyam, and experiencing that, Alpa Anubhavam, and that He calls it as Parabhakti. He calls it as Parabhakti. So, Parabhakti is the bhakti that is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna mentioned that. Bhaktim Labhade Param, he said, isn't it? That bhakti is parabhakti. He is not talking about temple worship or deity worship or the happiness you come from the deity worship. Right? So, you will see that in the such a person, when one is in that state, that is what is mentioned. A one who is in that parabhakti state, he is the one who purifies the whole generations. Remember to Prahlada, Narasimhamurti said, 21 generations will be purified, he said, because you were born in this lineage, in that dynasty, is it not? Because you were born, 21 generations, Trisaptami Pootakritam, it says, 3 times 7, 21 generations before and after will be purified because of your appearance. Why? Because of this Parabhakti of Prahlada, right? And he, such a person, he purifies others and he purifies the whole planet. Kulam pavitram janani kridartham vasundhara punyavati cha yena Apara sachil sugasagara esmin leenam pare brahmani yasya chetaha.
That because of such a great soul appears in that family, he purifies everybody. And mother who delivered that child becomes realized. And similarly, due to his birth, even the mother earth herself is purified. And after that, that devotee who had realized like that, he is not much different from Krishna himself in many ways, right? So that is why that verse is important. It says like that here: Kulam pavitram janani kridartham vasundhara punyavati chayena aparasachil sugasagarasmin leenam vare brahmani yasya chetaha. So, such a person when he appears in this world, somebody great like that is the highest benefit for this Mother Earth. And Mother Earth is benefited, and more or less like a rishi, what they call it as, there's a word for that called Hridambara Pratnya. Hridambara Pratnya means that their Anubhuti Mandalam is higher. They are on a higher, they are not like ordinary people, in other words. Ordinary people are in the platform of the body and the mind, and eating, sleeping, mating, defending. This is ordinary people's life. But personalities like Vivekananda and many others who come like that, their Anubhuti Mandalam, their field of existence is different. They are not existing in the same field as we do, right? So Vivekananda said that when he saw Paramahamsa, he said that, I could see our Rishi Parambara, he says, I saw in him. What the Rishi Parambara has produced, I saw that in him, he said. As I mentioned before, he was not educated in the university and the college or schools, what we are educated. He didn't go to the universities in Calcutta or any place. But Vivekananda says about Paramahamsa, When I saw him, he says, I saw what the Rishi Parambara has produced, a personality like this, with so much conviction about the Ishvara, conviction about the soul, conviction about Brahman. That is the difference. That is the difference. He says, Vedandam evam purusham mahandam. One verse it says like that, isn't it? When he, with such a confidence, he told me, the way I know you, I can show you Ishvara to you in that way, right? So, when one gets an opportunity like that to meet someone with that caliber of that spiritual realizations, right? So, he's saying here, such a person, right, is mentioned that Manishyatvam Mamuchatvam Mahapurusha Samshrayam. That Mahapurusha Samshrayam, right? So, these three things, getting a human birth and getting an opportunity, getting a desire for liberation from these four problems of birth, death, old age and disease. Getting a human birth is rare. And getting a desire to become free from these four problems of life, birth, death, old age and disease. And more than that, to get the association of a great personality like that, Mahapurusha Samshaya, right? These three are very, very rare. And once you have got that, see, human body we all got, we have got body, right? But Mumukshatvam, that means to realize the self, knowledge of the self, that desire is not coming. Hunger is not there for self-realization. Yeah. So, when you have that desire, Mumukshatvam, and with that Mumukshatvam, if you get an opportunity for a Mahatma's association, Mahapurusha Samshraya, right, then your life becomes beneficial. Life becomes worthwhile. Otherwise, not, right? So, and so, samasta samsara anartha jala gamanam
will happen. That means Bhagavad Gita's topic is about that person who has got a human body and who has got mumukshatvam and who has got the association of Mahapurusha. When all these three things comes together, then the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita will be effective to that person, right? So, while commenting on Bhagavad Gita, after he has written commentary on Upanishads, and when he started writing commentary on Bhagavad Gita, he says here, the truth who has spoken Bhagavad Gita, referring to Krishna, the truth, he says, who has spoken this Bhagavad Gita, he has come in the form of Vedavyasa Maharshi, and he compiled these 700 verses, which is in the Bhagavad Gita, right? And when doubts came after reading this Bhagavad Gita, in order that there should not be any further doubt about Bhagavad Gita, and in order to clip ourselves free from doubts, he says there in the Upodghadam, in the beginning itself, he says, artha siddharanam, that's the word he has used there, that, artha nirdharanartham samkshepta vivaranam karishyami. You know, the introduction is very small. It's not very, two or three pages. But in two, three pages, the way he has spoken about Bhagavad Gita, he says, like a thunderbolt it is. It hits you so hard. Every single word chosen so carefully to talk about Bhagavad Gita. What Bhagavad Gita is, right? So he's saying here, tadartha avishkaranaya anega vivruta pada padartha vakyartha nyayam atyanta viruddham anekartatvene laukike grihyamanam ubalabhya aham vivekta. He's saying here openly, he says, before Ajari Swamiji wrote this commentary, he says, many other people have written commentary on this, right? And they have also explained the word by word about Bhagavad Gita. And because of that, a lot of conflicting opinions have come among the public. Therefore, I have decided to write this commentary, he said. And that's how he begins this commentary. Tasya, asya Gita Shastra says, samkshapta prayogam. Prayojanam param nishrayasam. So, Ajari Swamiji says here, the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is only one thing. What is that? Self-realization. Nothing else. He said, anybody else interprets Bhagavad Gita in any other form, throw them out. Don't accept it, he said. Because Bhagavad Gita has been abused in many, many different ways by people. But, so, there he mentioned that, that Gidartha dharmam uddishya bhagavada eva uktam. And therefore he initially wanted to say this to us, that the when he wrote his commentary on Bhagavad Gita, that I have written this commentary because people have abused Bhagavad Gita so much in different ways, right? So, so he mentions there that He's saying, the way he puts it is, that me, he says, Shankaracharya himself says, I am the son of Shiva Guru and Aryamba, father and the mother, right? But when I am writing this commentary, he says, I am not that only. I am that power who sat inside Krishna's heart and spoke this. When Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, that power, which was in Krishna's heart, who was speaking Bhagavad Gita, that power, and which later on sat in Vedavyasa Maharshi's heart and compiled it in the form of verses and put it in the book format, 700 verses. That same power is in me and talking about it, and that is how I have written this commentary. He puts it like that. In other words, What he is saying is that this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita is coming from the source, original source, Sachidananda Brahman itself, right? So, so he wrote this Gita Bhashyam, and that is why if you read that prayers, what we recite in the morning, you know, prayers what we do in the morning? Gita Dhyanam, yeah. He wrote that Gita Dhyanam. You see, now, if you study that Gita Dhyanam, Parthaya Pradibodhidam Bhagavadam, that is his words, right? Yeah. So, Gita Dhyanam, if you study it, look at it carefully, what is he saying there? He is saying, Krishna is, Arjuna is the calf, Vedam is the milk, Krishna is the milkman. Yeah, all those verses, you know what that means, right? So, and he is saying here that, if this Gita Jnanam, Gita is studied properly, Alpa Jnanam, knowledge of the self, must happen, he says. If you have studied Bhagavad Gita properly, knowledge of the self must happen, he says. You cannot say that knowledge won't come from Bhagavad Gita. That is what, Bhagavad Gita is a book of knowledge. More than book of bhakti or karmam, it is a book of knowledge. So, Acharya Swamiji pushes this very strongly. He says, if you have studied Bhagavad Gita properly, knowledge must be there. Knowledge of the self must happen. That's what he's saying there. Nishrayasaharam, paramaprayojanam, he said. So, if you have not known your real self, Swarupam, right, and with all imperfections in this world, you recognize, still, with all the imperfections of this world, you will recognize your center, that Antaryami. And that center is perfect. That center is perfect. Like Ishopanishad says, isn't it? Purnam. Purnamadam, Purnamidam. It's referring, yeah, the same. So, that Purnatvam, perfection, you see, perfection is not in the body and it is not possible. Perfection is not possible in the body. Perfection is not possible in the mind. Perfection is not possible in the intelligence. Perfection is not possible in the ahankaram, ego. But there is a center inside, Antaryami, where there is perfection. And that realization is self-realization. That realizing that perfection in the Antaryami is self-realization. You are realizing in our real nature, which is the Antaryami, there is perfection. In all other fields we are imperfect, are we not? Everything else if you take, in bodily level if you take, we are imperfect. Because otherwise why should the body disappear one day? Why does it get sick? Why does it get old? That means it's not perfect. The mind also in the same way. Today it will think one way, tomorrow it will think in a different way. Day after it will be in another way. It is playing its game. That means in mental platform also, you can never be perfect. Take your intelligence also, same thing. Today you will think you are very intelligent, but tomorrow another young man comes and he has learned more than you, you've become outdated. All your intelligence is over. You are not able to compete with him because he has developed a higher understanding, he has gone to university, acquired all kinds of other knowledges, and you can't compete with him anymore. So one time you are thinking you are intelligent, but somebody else has proven that you are not intelligent. So in all these fields, bodily level, mental level, intellectual level, and what to talk about, ahankaram, ego also. You know, when your ahankaram is crushed, you are lost, finished, right? In all these level, perfection is not possible. But what Acharya Swamiji is saying is that if you have come to Bhagavad Gita, and if you have understood that Antaryami inside, which is your real identity, there is perfection there. Perfection is there. Yeah? So that perfection is what he is talking about here. So, which is perfect and there is no imperfection. And this chapter, Purushottama Yogam, is going to begin with that understanding. Purushottama Yogam is all about that perfection in the Antaryami. In bodily level, perfection is not possible. In the mental platform, perfection is not possible. Only in the self-realized state of Purushottama Yogam, he is going to talk about that the is talking about this tree upside down first, right? And it branches, fruits, and all these are outside, and the seed is inside, and that is what he is calling it as the samsara vriksham. That means this tree, samsara, is compared to a tree, right? If you inquire outside this tree, you won't get to know anything, right? And the root of this tree is present and you got to inquire where the root is. Where the root is. You have to go there and find out the root where the tree has come. And if you have learned that art of inquiring, that finding out the root where it came from, that art is called Brahmavidya. That art is called Brahmavidya, right? So this vidya, Brahmavidya, which is what they call it sometimes as Arsha Parambara or Veda Parambara, right? The way it was spoken by the rishis and the way of life what they led, their way of life, what they have spoken about them, when they were leading that life, when they had experienced what they, Bhagavad Gita is talking about, karmanushtanam, similarly their upasana processes, what they followed, and all these things combined together, along with their yoga power, this Brahmavidya tradition existed. That's how Brahmavidya tradition existed, right? And it is that sampradayam what the rishis brought to this world of Brahmavidya. You got to follow that to get to know this. It is not easy. It is not easy. Just by reading some verses and understanding the meaning is not going to produce the result. If the result has to happen, then the system, what the rishis, their way of life, their, you know, Bhagavad Gita can only help you, help us up to some extent because of our fallen condition. It's not Bhagavad Gita's fault. Our situation where we are now in this world, in our present state, only so much you can do about it. Science is perfect. The science of Bhagavad Gita is perfect. There's nothing wrong with that. But in order this science to happen now, that rishi's process you have to accept, their way of life, and their upasana, sadhana, what they did, and also their karmanushtanam. Whatever the rishi parambara followed in their time, that has to be there in us, but which we don't have. This is our present misfortune, the way we are now, right? And we are just, you know, most of the people are what they are thinking. They are thinking, I'll take Bhagavad Gita, I'll remember all the verses, I'll study, and also translation purport, I'll do some preaching and everything will be alright. Nothing will be alright if you do that, go that way. This is a science which is way beyond our present life to achieve. It is much before, higher, it is much higher goal and much higher preparation required for this. As we said this morning, that rishis have a system of studying this. Studying means that how to follow Bhagavad Gita. And that thing is that their karmanushtanam, their karmam, their way of life, their upasana process. Can you imagine rishis going to work morning 8 o'clock in the morning and coming home at 5 o'clock and he has got a 2 weeks holiday. Can you imagine a rishi like that, living like that? Where will that rishi will be then? He won't become a rishi in that way. Rishis are people who are completely dedicated for self-realization and they have accepted what Krishna has spoken and they are trying to live up to that, what Krishna has spoken. But in our present situation, that it may not be possible. So, from Bhagavad Gita, you have to take what is possible in our present fallen state. More than that is difficult to get anything out of Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, you can study Bhagavad Gita a lot of things, but it will be just in the mind and intelligence. It will happen in that way, right? So, so that sampradayam, that system, what existed. Remember what I said, Narayanam, Padmabhuvam, Vasishtam, Shakti, Parasharam, Vedavyas, Shukabrahmarshi, who originally cultivated this knowledge, and they were all rishis. They were all rishis, weren't they? So as rishis, how they lived and cultured this knowledge and practiced it, that level you can't do it today in our present state.
Yeah.
Few things you will pick up from there, what you can take benefit from that, at least to understand that such a Brahmavidya exists. That itself is a big relief. That there is a higher knowledge, Brahmavidya, and that Brahmavidya, practiced by these great personalities, does exist. It's not that it doesn't exist. It is us who are not able to take full advantage of the Bhagavad Gita, right? So that is the first verse. If you look how Krishna begins that, yeah, his 15th chapter. If you look at the first verse, Shri Bhagavan Vacha, then Urdhamolam Atha Shaka Ashwatham Prahuravyayam Chandamsi Yasya Parnani Yastam Vedasa Vedavit. It's Krishna just put it in four lines what he has to say. Like every other verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It is like that. Bhagavad Gita is a very, 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 very deeper subject, right? Just by me saying, let us dive into it, you won't be able to dive into it so easily. It's not so easy to dive into this, right? People say like that, don't they? Let us dive into it, they say. What kind of diving can you do with this verses? It is not so simple, right? So, Urdhamulam Adhashakam Ashwatham Prahuravyayam Chandamsi Yasya Parnani Yasvam Vedasa Vedavit. Krishna put one verse like that in front of us and left us to understand what it means, right? So, he's saying that there is a tree, it's upside down. And if you have known where the tree has begun, the root, where it started, if you have known that, you have understood Vedam, he says. That is Krishna's way of saying. Krishna is saying, you have understood Vedam, provided that tree, what he is going to talk about, the root is there somewhere. And if you have understood the root, you have understood Vedam. That's how he begins, right? So, if for all of us, you know what he is saying here, Vedavit. That's the word he has used, Vedavit. If you have to become Vedavit, only you have to know Bhagavad Gita. That's enough. Bhagavad Gita is enough to become Vedavit, right? Whether you have studied Vedam or not, or whether you are qualified or not for Vedam, you don't have to think about all that. Don't have to worry about all that, right? And every day, if you are performing your anushtanam, daily anushtanam, nitya anushtanam, and if you are reading Bhagavad Gita daily, on a daily basis, if you are reading Bhagavad Gita, you are in one level Vedavit. You are one level Vedavit, yeah? So, Brahmanas also, normally, you know, in traditionally, people studied Bhagavad Gita at home very seriously. They will recite, some people recite the whole Bhagavad Gita every day. 4 or 5 hours they take to recite the whole Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita had such a powerful impact on the society at that time. So, similarly, Brahmanas had certain requirements in daily life, that by the time the sun comes to the middle of the day, in the top of the sky, in the middle of the sky, right, they have to finish a certain part of recitation of the Vedam before that, right? So, so when they are doing that, they will ask this question, how do I find time to study Bhagavad Gita then after that? So, so if you are able to study it, right, you should study it. Otherwise, yastvam vedasa vedavit. In other words, daily parayanam is required. Daily recitation of the Bhagavad Gita. Nitya parayanam. If one has tasted Bhagavad Gita, tasted Bhagavad Gita means, when you're studying Bhagavad Gita, different parts in the Bhagavad Gita will make you to think different things. Thoughts will come inside. Sometimes Krishna will talk about karma, sometimes Krishna will talk about bhakti, sometimes he'll talk about jnanam. All these different things Krishna presents there in that 700 verses, it creates a different thoughts comes inside, a person who is reading it seriously on a daily basis, right? And and one who has absorbed in the Bhagavad Gita seriously, for him, he will find a tremendous shanti and bhakti and anandam from that, right? So, therefore, like the Brahmanas used to recite Vedam, in the similar way, people have taken to Bhagavad Gita, recitation of Bhagavad Gita also, right? And everyone is allowed, is entitled for that, no matter who it is. So even if you have not understood Bhagavad Gita, simply by reciting the verses in the Bhagavad Gita, gradually from inside, Antaryami will give you the understanding. That is how you study Bhagavad Gita. Not like with the help of dictionaries, word by word meaning, and you know, by your analysis, you understand Bhagavad Gita by Antaryami's mercy. Antaryami from inside has to give you that understanding of Bhagavad Gita. That's the first thing to know. That Bhagavad Gita, you cannot study it like any other book. It is coming from the source, you have to remember. Antaryami is the source. So if Antaryami reveals to you realizations, then Bhagavad Gita becomes a reality for us. Otherwise not. So studying Bhagavad Gita is not easy. That's why people keep on reading Bhagavad Gita every day on a regular basis. By doing that, what happens is sometime in the future, someday, Antaryami will give you some understanding from inside. With the hope they recite the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll start from next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Mm-hmm.